Me and my twin sister used to share a single Neopet account, which was a dumb decision because it was completely free to make a second Neopet account, and we already struggled at sharing things in the non-virtual world. But the reason we co-ran our Neopet account was because we didn't want to put our pets through a divorce, and because we wanted to save up our Neopoints for a paintbrush. For those of you who grew up with real video games, in Neopets, a paintbrush was a super rare item that would change your Neopet's appearance based off the paintbrush you used. There were Christmas paintbrushes, baby paintbrushes, Guy Fieri paintbrushes, and an invisible paintbrush that just turned your Neopet invisible. Why? When I said that paintbrushes were a rare item, I meant it. You see, your average Neopet paintbrush would sell for about 1 to 2 million Neopoints, and the most me and my sister had ever saved up was about 100,000. Why did you spend 3K on food? We're trying to get paintbrushes! It was Flower 67's birthday, and you spent 4K getting that stupid jacket! The jacket is cool and you know it! One day, my sister went searching in the back alleys of the internet for other ways to obtain a paintbrush, and she stumbled upon this website that said, "Get free paintbrushes," and all she had to do was enter in her username and password, and they'd send us a fairy paintbrush. Ooh! And in a moment of desperation, she entered in the login details of our shared account into a shady website, and you'll never guess what happened next. We log into our account, and there were 3 fairy paintbrushes in our inventory, and just kidding, we got hacked! And we lost all 100,000 of our Neopoints, and we never got the paintbrush we were promised. But we learned a valuable lesson that day, which was, people will try to scam you, so trust no one. We were lucky enough to only lose virtual money, but some people aren't that lucky. On the internet, you have to deal with people trying to scam you constantly. There's probably comments underneath this very video of people using my name and profile picture saying, "Click on this link and get a free gift card," and they always use a stupid amount of emojis so their comment sticks out more. I thought it was obvious that those comments were fake, but some people still fall for them. Listen, we need to get one thing straight about our relationship. If I ever use this many emojis, I want you to shoot me. Scammers like to target non-tech-savvy people, or what I like to call babies and baby boomers. There's a lot of things you can do to help prevent people from taking advantage of you on the internet, but my rule of thumb is that if something sounds too good to be true, it is. No one's giving out free gift cards, your long-lost uncle didn't wire transfer you money, and you can't get free paintbrushes. You can't cheat the system, that's just life, man. Also, if you ever get a pop-up saying your computer has a virus, call this number to fix it. Don't. A guy with an Indian accent named Jason will charge you real money to fix the virus, but won't do anything. Because you never had a virus in the first place. But those are all illegal scams. People go to jail over those scams. Identity theft is not a joke, Jim. Millions of families suffer from it every year. However, there are some scams that are, for some unknown reason, completely legal. And frankly, I think we should reopen Alcatraz for the people who do these scams. So here's my list for the top 4 legal scams that shouldn't be legal. The first legal scam is mobile games. I was doing a show with this 9-year-old kid named Araya, and in the show he was going to punch me like this. And one day while we were rehearsing, Araya asked me, "Can I play some games on your phone?" So I gave him my phone, and his dad told me, "Hey man, I don't even trust my kid with my phone." And I thought, what's the worst thing he can do besides tweet something or delete my YouTube channel? But he did something so much worse. He downloaded a free game, and inside the game, you could buy a VIP member version that gave you extra lives and more skins. The thing that was a scam was that the app gave you the VIP member free for 3 days, then charged you $6 a week. That's $1 a day, not including Thursdays, to play some stupid mobile game. It's more expensive than a Netflix subscription and a tasty hot and ready $5 Little Caesars pizza. Now, some of you might be thinking, okay, yeah, that's a ridiculous price for a mobile game, but that's not a scam. They tell you how much it's going to cost right there on the screen. But here's the thing. Roughly 0 people bought the VIP member pass because they were fans of the game and didn't mind the price. No one is willing to pay a weekly bill for a game where all you do is this. But 100% of the people who paid for the subscription are kids using their parents' phone and bought the VIP pass because they have no concept of money. And you don't even have to enter in your credit card information, so it's easier for kids just to hit the purchase 6,000 gems button. It's targeting kids, and I don't like it. Scam. I wish I had the confidence of a mobile game developer to charge someone $312 a year to play their stupid game. My proposal to fix this scam is to ban mobile games entirely and everyone play Tetris 99. Nintendo Online is cheaper than the VIP club subscription anyway. The second legal scam is college. Textbooks. We live in a society where all human knowledge and misconceptions are contained on the internet. But if you print out that knowledge and bind up the pages, suddenly you made a best-selling book that people are required to buy. There are some textbooks that are just a CD or a code that you need a computer to even access the book, so what's the point of buying the textbook if you have a computer that's connected to the internet in the first place? And don't tell me that the books are better for people that don't have internet. I know you have an internet connection, because... come on. My solution to this scam is to drop out and make YouTube videos. The third legal scam is psychics. I don't want to debate whether or not psychics are real, because they're not. My horoscope told me so. My belief is that no one can talk to dead people because we're not living in a cartoon. And it just makes me sick that there are psychics who are taking advantage of people who are grieving and are so desperate to talk to their loved ones again that they'll try anything, even paying people to lie to them. Ooh, I burned my finger on that hot take. Now, I don't think that every psychic out there is trying to scam people. Most of them are. But I do think there are some psychics who legitimately believe that dead people use them as a vessel to talk to their living relatives. And in their three eyes, they are helping and giving their clients closure. I understand that a very small percentage of them are just trying to help. But it doesn't matter because they're all fake. My solution to this scam is that you don't pay a psychic unless they can guess how much money you're going to pay them. Should be close to zero, hopefully. And the last legal scam is multi-channel networks. Wait, do you guys hear that? It sounds like bridges being burned. When your YouTube channel starts growing, you'll get contacted by a multi-channel network, or MCN, and they'll make empty promises that if you join their network, they can help your channel grow and earn more money. And they'll brag about how many people are in their network, when really that just means there's less of a chance they'll care about you. And all you have to do to join is give them a percentage of your YouTube money every month. And once you sign your soul away, what a network will actually do is nothing. Except take a cut of your money every month. It's like showing your dog a tennis ball and then pretending to throw it, and then when the dog realizes he's chasing nothing, he's already signed a 3-year contract to keep chasing the fake ball. I know this last scam might not apply to everyone watching, but if this video helps at least one up-and-coming YouTuber to not join an MCN, then it will have been worth it. So that's my list for the top 4 legal scams that should not exist and die. I don't think this video is going to actually change anything. People will always be greedy and try and get money any way they can. So if there's anything you should take away from this video, is that I'm giving away free gift cards! Click the link in the description to claim your prize!
Good morning, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my list of the top 4 legal scams that should be illegal. If there's any psychics in the audience that I offended, you should have known before watching this video that I don't agree with you. And if there's any MCNs watching this video, please stop emailing me. So I'm really excited to announce some Halloween merch, which includes a freaking Halloween costume. I know it's August, but I don't really get a lot of chances to update you guys on things, so we're doing it now. If you want to get your hands on a costume, you should order it soon, because we only ordered a certain amount of costumes, so once they sell out, they won't be ready until next year. If you have any questions about the sizing or the shipping, then be sure to ask my business email. Thank you for watching this video and sticking around to listen to the end card. I know a lot of people click off once the end card starts, but at least you're cool. A big thanks to everyone who worked on this video, and until next time, wear your seatbelt.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you, yes, you watching this right now, are an introvert. How do I know this? Because you're watching YouTube videos instead of being outside.
What are you doing on the computer? Go outside, so beautiful!
Don't worry, I'm an introvert too. I got an email from an 8-year-old once. He said he liked my videos. It was one of the worst emails I ever got. So I'm just going to briefly explain what introvert means to all the 8-year-olds watching this. Hey, kids! Are you ready to learn? An introvert is a person who doesn't really like to play with other kids. This doesn't make them sad that they're lonely. They just would rather play by themselves. Think of it this way. Has your friend ever asked you to play with them, but you didn't really want to, so you asked your mom to make up a reason for you not to go? If so, then you're probably an introvert. or you just need better friends. Me and my mom had a code word, so if a friend was on the phone who wanted to hang out, I would say, "Let me ask my mom." And when I asked her, if I said the code word, it meant, "Mom, make up an excuse so I can't go." I'm not gonna say the code word because I still plan on using it. I actually made a comic kinda similar to this back in 2014, and it's one of my most popular comics, so thanks for liking it. Obviously, it'd be one of my most popular comics. I mean, look how great it is. Michael, the creator of Vsauce. Hey, Vsauce. Michael here. Has this new YouTube Red show called Minefield. And as of right now, it's the best YouTube Red series. And in the first episode, Michael goes into an isolation room for 3 days. He has no technology, he's all by himself for 3 days. When I first saw this, I thought, hey, maybe I should try that. Yeah, 3 days of nothing but your own thoughts. I can think of comic ideas, I can write a book, and I don't even have to write any of these ideas down because everything I say is being recorded. This could be my next vacation. Also, speaking of YouTube Red, hey Susan, I heard you had a new spot open for a Red series. I have this great idea called the YouTuber Swap. It's like Wife Swap, but with YouTubers. Just hit me up if you're interested. Now, don't get the wrong idea that I'm someone who hates people. I don't. It's just, if we're strangers, then I'd rather not talk to you. Unless you're a stranger who's a fan of my videos. Okay, we can talk about me all day. Bringing up a point from the last video, don't be afraid to talk to me. You know, every YouTuber is in a weird position with their fans, because if you meet me, you already have a pretty good idea of who I am as a person. For instance, you know how long I wet the bed, but for me, I have no clue how long you wet the bed. So, what are we talking about? I'm okay with having a conversation with people, okay? It's just that I'm never the one who starts the conversation. But again, this doesn't apply to fans. I like to think that I'm decent with conversation, but I don't really know how good I am at it. I did fail public speaking. But on occasion, there are times when it's awkward not to talk to a stranger. One time in my college years, I got on an elevator to go to a class and another person got on with me. I live a pretty crazy life, I know. And I did what anyone should do in that situation. I didn't say anything to the other person. But then when we got on our floor, you know how the elevator doors are supposed to open? Well, this time, it didn't. The doors didn't open. This is an introvert's worst nightmare, by the way. And it wasn't one of those elevators that you could fit a king-size bed into. This elevator was about the size of a red box. Is the door gonna open? It seems like it should open by now. What do you do in that situation? You can't not talk to the person you're now trapped with. So, what class are you going to? Physics? Oh, that makes sense, because this is a science building. Enough time had passed where we started looking up the school's number to tell them that we were stuck, which is what you're supposed to do, right? There's not, like, a button on the elevator that you can press to call for help, right? But luckily, while we were doing that, for whatever reason, after a solid 2 minutes, the door decided to open. And just the wave of relief that went over me and this kid. Oh, I thought we'd be in there for hours!
I hope I never see you again.
Same. And that's why I'm never going in an elevator again. It's too risky. I think the problem I have is that I'm bad at starting conversations. Normally, if I'm talking to someone who I don't know, I'll ask, "So, how was your day?" But if your day was anything but good, I don't want to hear it. My dog died. Yeah, they do that. Why is starting a conversation so hard? I only know like 3 good conversation starters. The first one is, "How was your day?" And if that doesn't work, I start talking about all this crazy weather we're having. And in Arizona, there's really only one weather. Hot. Although it did rain like 2 weeks ago. And lastly, if I have nothing else to ask, I hit them with a really hard question. What color is your toothbrush? Mine's red. To start a conversation, sometimes people will ask, "What's your favorite blank?" I have nothing against these types of questions. I think it tells you a lot about the person you're talking to. But there's one form of this question that I really hate. And it's the question, "What's your favorite candy bar?" And I hate this question because my favorite candy bar, and I will stick by my answer no matter what you think, is M&M's. That's not a candy bar. Ow! What an astute observation! I'm a very simple man, alright? I like my chocolate pure. Sometimes when people ask this, I think, I should just say Twix. People won't get mad if I say Twix. But then I remember, screw Twix, I like M&M's. But James, why don't you just say Hershey's bar? Because Hershey's makes a mess on your hands, and they don't come in a convenient bite-sized pieces, while M&M's hard outer shell improves their overall texture. Why am I even having this argument? I had a friend tell me, "Well, James, I really like Smarties, but I know they're not a bar, so I don't say they're my favorite candy bar." First of all, dude, Smarties? Really? That's your favorite candy? And second of all, the person asking the question honestly doesn't care what my answer is. Why are you asking such a specific question? You're excluding so much other candy. Candy bars are exclusively chocolate. What if my favorite candy isn't chocolate? What if it's Smarties? Whoa, did you guys see what I just did there? I was talking about M&M's for like a whole minute. I was having a conversation. All because I was arguing why M&Ms are my favorite candy bar. So that's it. That's how you talk to people. You disagree with everything they say and then argue about it. So everyone watching, argue about your favorite candy bar down in the comments.
I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry.
Hey, James!
Hey!
Furby? Everyone's gonna put on $2,000 animal costumes and walk around. Do you wanna come?
No.
But don't let me stop you from this hobby of yours. I may not understand why you like it, but as long as you're not harassing or hurting anyone, or anything, then do whatever makes you happy. Also, shower regularly and eat your vegetables.
So, in the last video, I made a haha joke about being a furry.
I said given the choice between an animal with fur and one without fur, that most people would think the animal covered in fur would be cuter. And, ha, if we applied that logic to people, then everyone would be a furry. I got a mixed bag of responses to that joke.
Okay, I was looking at all the comments about James saying he's a furry, and in my opinion, it shouldn't matter. If James is a furry and he told you, that means he trusts you and thinks that you would accept him the way he is.
I don't care, I'm not watching him anymore.
Well, that's really nice of you, Mr. Branch. But I still don't trust you. A lot of people were confused, so for the remainder of this video, every time I make a joke, it will be followed by this message. Two muffins are in an oven. One says, "Boy, it's hot in here." And the other says, "Yeah, you live in Arizona, what'd you expect?" But I'd say for the most part, you guys were very accepting. So that's good to know if I ever do want to come out as something.
But if we wanted to talk about someone who is a furry, then look no further than 600 BC.
You have to look pretty far. What am I talking about? I'm talking about this man named Aesop. Aesop. Aesap. Aesuabway. This man was the world's first furry. Okay, I'm calling him a furry because he wrote a lot of fables with talking animals in them, so I'm making fun of him for writing a lot of furry fanfiction.
I'm making fun of a dead person.
I made a video about a year and a half ago reading some of Aesop's fables, and that video is what this official Odd Ones Out shirt is referencing. Fables are short stories, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end. Characters in fables don't have names. They're just simple, cookie-cutter characters.
You don't have a fable with Michelangelo and Raphael from the Ninja Turtles. No, you have a fable with the tortoise and the other tortoise.
So I'm going to read some more of Aesop's fables, but I'll be focusing on just one character. The fox. The fox gets around. You could pick any animal, and a fable exists with that animal being taken advantage of by a fox. The fox and the Triceratops. That fable probably exists. With the amount of fables the fox has been in, you'd expect him to be more moral than Gandhi. Aesop really liked foxes. His persona was probably a fox.
The fox and the goat.
So once there was this fox eating some cheese, he wasn't looking where he was going, and he fell down a well. The fox had no way of getting out. Then a goat just so happened to be walking by and said, "Hey, what are you doing down there, you silly goose?"
"Actually, I'm a fox," said the fox.
"I was just drinking some of this lovely water.
Is it good?"
"Oh, it's only the best water in the entire universe." So the goat decided to jump down and join the fox. But then the fox used the goat. He used her as a stepping stool to get out of the well.
The website I'm reading this from has an interactive picture that shows the events that happened. Let's watch.
So then the goat says, "Whoa, buckaroo, aren't you gonna help me out?"
No.
"Instead, I'm gonna teach you a moral. If you had as much sense as you have beard, you would have been more cautious about finding a way to get out again before you jumped in. Look before you leap, you stupid idiot."
Okay, goodbye.
"But fox, you fell into the well too. You were the one not looking. The goat looked, you just lied to her. And you got away with it. So the real moral of the story is, you can abuse the people in your life with no consequences, as long as they end up dead in a well."
The fox and the crab. This fable is pretty short. Once there was a crab who was tired of living next to sand, so he decided to move to a meadow.
And then a fox ate him.
That's the real fable!
It counted as one of Aesop's 665.
And the moral is, be content with your lot. Don't move, don't travel, don't try and live in a better location because a fox might eat you! Just live in your studio apartment and deal with it!
The lion, the bear, and the fox.
This baby goat, he's a kid, went up to a lion and a bear and said, "Have you seen my mom? I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks. She said she was going to get some water and a pack of smokes, and she hasn't come home." But the bear and the lion didn't care. They started fighting each other over who would get to eat the baby goat.
and then a fox jumped out of the bushes, killed the kid, and ran off with it. I wonder how much Aesop got paid for these. Again, the website has a very nifty interactive picture that shows you exactly what occurred. And the moral of the story? Those who have all the toil do not always get the profit. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Seems to me the moral should be, don't talk to lions and bears, and watch out for foxes. The fox and the grapes. Basically what happens in this fable was that once there were some grapes growing on a really tall tree. Do grapes grow on really tall trees? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And the fox really wanted some of the grapes. Do foxes like grapes? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And so he tried to get them himself, but he couldn't reach them. And since the fox didn't want to ask for help, probably because all the other animals hated him, he said, "Eh, I didn't want your sour grapes anyway." There are many who pretend to despise and belittle that which is beyond their reach. Which is where I think the phrase, money is the root of all evil, came from. People were upset that they couldn't get money, so they just said, "Eh, I didn't want your evil money anyway." Okay, here's the last fable. This one's kinda sad. The fox and the scorpion. So the fox, this whole time, had been gathering ingredients to make the perfect sandwich. He got the meat from an orphaned goat, a sautéed depressed crab, and some cheese. He was also going to get a side of grapes, but he decided to go without them. When all of a sudden, a scorpion comes up to him and said, "Hey, can I get a ride across the river? I'm too small to swim across." "Ha! Nice try, Slick. If I gave you a ride, you'd just sting me." No, if I did that, we'd both drown. It would be a lose-lose. "All right, I'll help you out. I've been acting like a huge jerk lately, all to make this one sandwich. But I'm gonna change starting now. For once, I'm gonna be helpful." So the fox gives the scorpion a ride, when all of a sudden... "Why'd you sting me?"
"Because I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature."
"Yeah, but you're a talking scorpion! I thought you'd have enough cognitive sense to know not to do that! You even said yourself that if you stung me, we'd both die!"
"Actually, I can hold my breath for 6 days."
"What?"
"Yeah, watch."
"My sandwich."
And then the fox died. He had no family, no friends, and no sandwich. And that's why you never help scorpions.
"Just lied to you guys! I pranked you! This fable wasn't the fox and the scorpion, it's actually the frog and the scorpion. The fox never got stung. He knows better than to help out another creature. Fox is too busy looking out for number one, baby!" The frog's dead, though. And if it makes you happy, the scorpion died, too. And the fox got to enjoy his sandwich. Still alone, but... the end! Man, what a plot twist! Aren't I so good at telling stories? So what did we learn, children? We learned, don't ask for help, don't help out others, lie to people, take what you want, and you'll succeed.
Doggies!
Aw, you need a fur cut. All better. You're cute. Aw. Poppy, stop it.
So this is what Arizona grass looks like, everyone.
Can you not?
I remember when I was first starting out, and I only had around 8,000 subscribers, which... is a good accomplishment, by the way. If you only have around 8,000 subscribers, then I mean, hey, good job. But I remember seeing one comment that was like, "James, when you're rich and famous, don't forget me." Ah! I'm gonna need some more glue.
Now I forgot who said that, but I didn't forget the comment.
So I just wanna thank you all for 500,000 subscriber- wait, what? So I wanna thank you all for 600,000 subscriber- wait, again? So 700,000 subscribers, that's quite a bit of people. Oh, the cake is already falling apart.
So 700,000, that's quite a bit of people, which means, boom. Now you might be asking yourself, "James, this measly 7-pound tub of sprinkles couldn't possibly be 700,000.
Boom,
boom,
pew, cha-pew.
So in case you didn't watch my 100,000 sprinkle subscriber special, what I did is I put 100,000 sprinkles on a cake, around 100,000 sprinkles on a cake, to represent each of my subscribers. But now I have 700,000. So using math from the first video, each of these big tubs are 7 pounds. So 21 pounds of sprinkles is 541,935 sprinkles. That means we are 98 ounces short. Ooh, did you hear that? Did you hear that whistle with the short? Jeez! Short. So each of these is 10 and a half ounces, so that's 21 ounces. These are 9 ounces of sprinkles. Plus, we have the sprinkles on the cake. And just to make sure we cover all of our bases, I'm going to use this technique that I learned from a Vsauce video. Basically, if we take one sprinkle and cut it in half, we get 2 sprinkles. Then if we cut those in half, we get even more sprinkles. And if we keep doing that forever and ever, we'll get infinity. This is what infinity looks like. Yeah. Smells pretty gross, actually. Ugh, it's like Play-Doh. Oh, it's like Play-Doh. It's a snake. Wow, look how many subscribers, like, there's in this one snake. Gross. Ta-da! So let's do this!
Oh.
So I just want to thank each and every single one of you. Now, some of you might think that you're just some grain of sand in this huge pile of sprinkles. I don't see my subscribers that way, though. Where is the cake? I found cake. It's down there. Ooh, I found some frosting. Sorry, I'm going to eat some of you guys prematurely. You know, some people brag saying, James, I've been following you since you only had 100,000 subscribers. And I think that they think that that makes them better. Now, I don't care if you've been following for 2 months or 2 minutes. I appreciate every single one of you. Man, there's like a lot of white ones in this one. Like, what the heck? And what I'm trying to say is, true fans would have been following me since 2012. Like, what the heck? I've been doing this for 4 years, you guys. Can you believe that there's a cake in this? I was going to try and eat some of the cake, but now... Oh, what? Ew, gross. This was in the... If you're subscribed, one of... Oh, gross. Ah, hit frosting. Seriously, though, thank you all for subscribing. You're not just some grain of sand in this ocean of subscribers. I appreciate each and every one of you. You made this possible. Fire in the hole! And then, just to be safe, there's the infinity sprinkle right there. Okay, let's dig in. Okay, we're just gonna see if we can... Get that out of there. We're just gonna see if we can hit cake. Oh, I forgot to do something. And this is the YouTubers that I like. This is you. Let's see if we can hit cake. It's coming up dry. I don't know how... Okay. Okay, come on. Okay, where's the cake? You know what? There we go. You made this possible. Oh, man. Like, surprisingly, it tasted really good with all those sprinkles on it. I'm gonna try that again. I wonder what this would taste like. I wonder what the infinity sprinkle. Oh, disgusting. Oh, it tastes like dirt. Why did it taste like dirt? Oh, man. And look, not a single sprinkle went on the floor. Thanks to this cardboard thing I made. Like, look. Ha. Oh, someone's on my hand. Ooh, this one's on my hand. One lone subscriber. It's off. Look at that. Look how well that held all the sprinkles. Oh, the cake was in it. All right, I found the cake. We should bury it back up. Bury that cake! Woo! Yeah! This is what it looks like to sink in sprinkles. Doggies! You try looking for the cake.
Better make sure that you sweep up frosting. The floor. I think some of your...
Oh, no. I don't need to sweep up the floor. My subscribers are all up here. And so I have this cardboard thing. Mom, don't eat my subscribers. I'm just going to, like, smash the cake. Ready? Stop it. You guys are like vultures.
That's a good cake.
I know, right? It tastes good with all these sprinkles on it, right? Or maybe it's just the sprinkles. These are just the ground-up sprinkles. Oh. I call them the infinity sprinkles. They don't eat those. It tastes like dirt.
Infinity looks a lot less pretty than I expected.
Yeah. I don't know why it's brown.
We need to save this for the million.
You better check and see. Make sure you don't have 800,000 subscribers today.
That is a very real possibility. Put these on the trampoline!
No. Ah!
It's my Zen garden. Thank you. Really.
Hey, kids, do you want some candy?
Yeah!
No, kids! Never accept candy from strangers! Don't you know candy can cause cavities? Next time a stranger offers you candy, just think about all the cavities you'd get.
This message brought to you by the Dentists of America Association.
You've all heard the phrase, stranger danger, right? Probably a parent slash guardian taught you that you should never trust strangers. And that's really solid advice because you're just a dumb kid who doesn't know what a pedophile is. But all those parent slash guardians grew up without the internet. And, the internet is full of strangers. And I'm one of them. How much do you really know about me?
I'm a math education major. I want to be a math teacher.
Is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little.
Think it was the Halloween after the bunny?
And that's why I'm a furry.
I, James, was a bedwetter until I was 8 years old.
Okay, granted, you do know quite a few personal details. The internet changes how we talk to people, meaning it's a lot easier to talk to strangers on the internet than in real life, because on the internet, you can find strangers who have the same interests, hobbies, and fetishes as you do. But I find it so hard to talk to new people. I would never have enough confidence to be a door-to-door salesman. There are some jobs where you have to deal with annoying customers, but being a door-to-door salesman, you're the annoying one. I guess I just hate bothering people. I'd be a terrible salesman.
What?
Do you have a water filter?
Yeah.
But I was just thinking that I could use another one.
Oh, then you probably don't need this. I'm sorry for wasting your time.
One time I actually did have to be a door-to-door salesman for a Boy Scout activity. But I wasn't even selling anything. I was just telling people about a canned food drive the scouts were doing. As a troop, it was our job to go door-to-door and ask people if there was any non-perishable food that they were willing to donate. Being a nervous little kid probably benefited me, because most people were super nice, and a lot of people donated stuff. And even the people who didn't donate were like, oh, sorry, I don't have anything on me.
You don't have any canned foods?
Well, dude, that's perfect. The house next door just gave me some. Here, these are for you. But there were two houses I went to that I still remember to this day. One guy pointed to his no soliciting sign and asked me if I knew what it said.
Yeah, I know what soliciting is.
I'd always thought that soliciting meant I couldn't sell you something, not that I couldn't ask you for free food. And at the other house, all the guy said was, listen, I'm not interested. And then both houses slammed the door in my face. Some of you are probably thinking, that's it? That was nothing. And yeah, looking back at the situation, I got off pretty easily. People who are a full-time door-to-door salesman probably have to deal with way worse stuff every day. But to a fragile-minded kid who was just doing what his scoutmaster told him to do, those experiences scarred me. Luckily, I'm not a salesman, so I'm usually the person on the other side of the door. I never know what to say to these people. For the longest time, I used to tell them the exact same thing. My mom's not home. But one day, that's not going to work. So for now, I just have to pretend that I'm interested, tell them I'll give them a call, and then put their pamphlet into the pile. My grandma, however, would, treat these door-to-door salesmen very differently. You see, my grandma is known as the nicest person on the planet, so she would invite these salesmen inside, offer them a glass of water, and then show them pictures of her grandkids. I'm not exaggerating. One time I was at my grandma's house just playing some video games, and this person, an adult person I'd never seen before, just started watching me play.
Are you one of my cousins?
And then my grandma handed him a big cup of water filled with ice and a straw. They talked for a bit. He left, and I asked,
Gram, who was that? Oh, it was someone just trying to sell me a vacuum cleaner.
But salesmen don't have it the hardest on the doorstep. There's also Jehovah Witnesses and Mormon missionaries who are literally trying to save your soul. I can't even get mad at these people because if you had the secret to eternal happiness, wouldn't you be telling everyone in your neighborhood too? They're trying to do good and all, but whenever they show up, hello, do you have time for to be baptized?
Oh, sorry guys, but you're wasting your time. You see, I'm in YouTuber, so I'm not going to heaven.
Here's a story that's a prime example of me failing at talking to people. I had just finished grocery shopping at Walmart, and this isn't important to the story, but Adam from Something Else YT was there.
Hello. Walmart's where I make friends.
I was walking to my car, and I started eating an Uncrustable frozen PB&J sandwich that I bought, and this guy drives up to me and yells, "Man, you're not even waiting to get in the car. You're just eating that thing up."
Yeah, I was hungry.
Then he pulls his car over and says, "All right, listen, fellas. I'm traveling to Buckeye, and I need $8 for gas, but I forgot my wallet at home." And I thought, huh, that's coincidentally how much a pack of cigarettes costs. He offered us his CDs in exchange for $8, but Adam said the smart thing.
Sorry, man, I don't got any cash on me.
And he showed the man his empty wallet. Poor. All I have is a 10.
You stupid mother...
I don't know why I said that. I think I was actually going to pay this man $8 if I had exact change. But here's the thing. I didn't only have a 10. I also had a 20. The guy saw my cash and said, "Man, all you have is a 10. Nah, man, I see you have a 20. And then he raised the price of his CDs from $8 to $30. Like I said, I should have handled the situation differently. If I was going to give him money, I should have given him a 10 and said, "Now give me $2 back." But he had a solid argument. He said, "If there were 20 dudes who all tried to jump you, I'd have your back." Now that's not a bad price for a Walmart parking lot bodyguard. You know, man, you gotta realize that money is just an object. Okay, then why do you want it? He asked us, "Do you boys like rap music?" He does.
Hey, I do. I listen to like Eminem, Kendrick Lamar, and Chance the Rap. Oh no.
And then the man pulled out his CDs, but he didn't have a CD player in his car, so he asked me if I could use my CD player, and I said, sure, but my CD player already had my mixtape in that I never bothered to take out, so when I turned on my CD player... Oh, I got something in my throat. By the way, if you want to listen to my whole mixtape, link in the description. Adam and I started listening to his CDs, and the man started doing this. Yeah, that's the good stuff. So what'll it be, little man? You gonna give me the money or nah, huh? Huh? Do I need to get my gang of 19 other dudes out? Huh? Yeah, I ended up giving the guy my $30. Honestly, I didn't get the meth head drug user vibe from him. He was more of a goofy dad who just needed $30. And after I gave him the money, he thanked us, saying things like, "God bless you," and talked about how much he was going to miss his CD. Now, was I scammed out of $30 and secretly this guy is laughing to himself that he sold a used rap CD to a white boy? Yeah, that definitely could be a possibility, but I hope whoever this guy is, that he pays the good deed forward. And I hope you made it to wherever you need to be. In conclusion, never carry cash on your kids.
I have never played Fortnite, but we're going to be playing a lot of it today, so buckle up. If I am going to get cracked, then I should probably download the game. Wait, what's an epic launcher? I just want to play Fortnite. Luckily, this endeavor won't break the bank because Fortnite is a free game. Really? I get to experience all of this for free? Today, we're going to be playing 100 games of Fortnite to see if we can actually improve, develop a skill, and try and earn that elusive victory royale. I mean, we're not playing Fortnite. I'm playing Fortnite. You're watching a YouTube video. Now, before we get into any games, let's first... Alright, I'm just going to go with my standard username, no big deal, and... Oh. Okay, yeah, that one's probably on me. The game's been out for 7 years, so I hope whoever has that account has been earning me a lot of dubs and make me look good. Okay, I guess we should keep a low profile. We don't want to get stream sniped, you know? So after hours of brainstorming, I settled on the name GatorGuy333, because I'm the Gator Guy. 333. There are two popular modes to play Fortnite. There's the classic Battle Royale mode with all the features and doodads that made the game as popular as it is, like doing this. And then there's Zero Build, where there's none of that shit. Now, which mode is the more competitive mode? Whichever mode I'm playing. For my very first game, I decided to play the classic Battle Royale mode, baby. We're playing Fortnite like how God intended. Builds on, ranked off, skin default. What, you think I'm gonna buy a skin? You think I'm gonna spend money on a free game? Get out of here. Oh my God, is that Peter Griffin? All right, enough talk. Let's start.
I would like to remind you that I'm playing Fortnite for the very first time.
Who's shooting me? Oh, God.
I didn't have a friend on call to tell me what buttons to press or give me emotional support. Like, no one told me, hey, don't drop that mythic gun for shield blasters. Shield blasters aren't even that good. Also, my go-to video games are Mario Maker and Tetris. I'm not really a first-person kind of shooter. What do you mean it's technically a third-person shooter? Who are the other two people? Instead of doing all of these unnecessary side quests, right now, my one and only quest is to be the best and not rest until I conquest all the sweats.
Do I take fall damage in this game?
Don't worry, Past James. You'll find out soon enough. I landed in fencing fields, and the second my feet touched the ground, I started getting shot at. I went inside a building and started breaking random objects, hoping that there was a gun inside them.
This is horrible sound.
And I grabbed a rare Striker AR. The very first gun in my Fortnite career, and it's already a rare? Let's go, dude. But then I found an uncommon shotgun just lying on the floor, and I had to pick which gun I was going to take to battle because my inventory was already full of priceless items. I decided to keep my rare gun because it had more bullets and because I like the color blue more than green. So,
can I only hold one gun, or is it like my inventory is full? Why am I? Who am I talking to? Oh! Ah! You stood no chance, bro. You stood no chance.
In that moment, I had gotten what I thought was my very first Fortnite kill. This, however, was not another player, but rather one of the many NPCs just wandering around the map. But I didn't know that at the time, so there was nothing but pure joy on my face. Almost immediately, I got a second Fortnite kill, and my suspicions that these were actually computer players were growing.
Is this a bot? Why can't I? They, like, didn't hurt me at all.
I started shooting what looked like a final boss, but had run out of bullets. Uh-oh. I ran away, narrowly dodging every shot being fired at me. I healed up, found another gun, tried shooting the boss again, ran out of bullets again, and then I ran away. Again. Hey, that's two confrontations where I didn't die. Clearly, I'm a natural. I knew I had to get away from the danger, so I started building a ramp.
And, like, we're building a staircase. Ah, oh, God. No. No, that's how it happened. That's how I went out.
So, yes, there is fall damage in Fortnite. You know what? Build mode sucks. Build mode's what killed me. We're done doing that. We're doing no build from now on. Now, before we get into game two, I would like to briefly explain some of the fundamentals I learned from playing that I wish someone explained to me. Starting with the guns are going to be your main tool for killing, and every gun has a rarity assigned to it, ranging from common, uncommon, rare, epic, mythic, and legendary. Those last two might be switched, actually, I never knew which adjective was better. But either way, orange and yellow guns are more rare than rare guns, and more epic than epic ones. I'm sorry if you already know this, okay? This is just how I process things, okay? I have to make a YouTube video about it. An uncommon sniper rifle could have the best scope in the game, while an epic one could have no scope at all. The epic sniper will do more damage and have a faster reload time, but if you can't hit anyone due to a lack of scope, which gun's actually better? Doesn't matter for me, I still couldn't hit anyone regardless. Also, this is an Overwatch 2. You have a limited amount of ammo, which in the early game is something you really have to be mindful of. I learned that my first day.
Am I out of... I'm out.
You'll just have to play the game to figure out which guns click with you, but my favorite guns are shotguns. And I have the data to back it up. The damage they do, as well as you not even needing good aim to do damage, make them a great choice for getting kills.
Fun! I'm having fun!
Unfortunately, you can't just go walking around with every shotgun you find. You only have 5 inventory slots that you have to use wisely. And you'll want to save at least 2 of those slots for a healing item and a specialty item. So really, you should only be going around with a maximum of 3 guns. But I'm not here to backseat game, all right? You can do whatever you want. It's a free game. Okay, enough explaining. Let's get back to match. I landed in fencing fields and immediately started getting shot at again. Not a super great start, I know.
How did you get a weapon so fast?
I found a gun, but with three other people shooting me, I decided my best option was to hide in a dumpster, which turned out to be a terrible hiding spot because the boss lady found me in 5 seconds. And for the next 4 minutes, I grabbed any gun or grenade I could find and started using them on all the grunts shooting me. And I was slowly starting to pick them off.
What's up? What's up, guys? How's it going? How many kills is this? One?
I was gaming so hard that I didn't even realize that this right here was my first actual Fortnite kill. XXX Dark Tonics XX. I'm sorry I had to do it to you, but you were the first player I ever eliminated. I hope knowing this fact makes you feel a sense of pride and accomplishment in me. My KD ratio is now perfectly balanced, so that's good. I took a moment to figure out the controls, and I started taking down some more players.
Let me see if I can, zoom in. Okay, I can crouch. Nope, that's... Oh, okay. Is there, a... Oh, if I hold... Oh, that's how I do it. What are you? Rare, and you have 30... Oh, wait, my other gun had 105 bullets.
With the boss eliminated, I opened a vault with a key card and found 2 epic guns and a rocket launcher. Also, on the way to the vault, I may or may not have dropped a mythic gun for some shield blasters. Thankfully, no one saw, so that would have been embarrassing.
Where's Tilted Towers? What was that?
A giant floating island appeared in the sky, and I decided to head up it.
See ya!
In the middle of the island, I started to capture a flag, and when I successfully captured it, I was rewarded with even more mythic guns that I didn't pick up for some reason. I'm sorry, rewatching this footage is just as painful for you as it is for me, okay?
Supersonic racing. Everybody was supersonic racing. Come on, load! Dude, I don't want to count any chickens or anything, but are we doing this?
I saw the storm closing in, and then I noticed...
Oh, there's only 2 people! It's me and one other guy!
And then this amazing clutch happened.
Okay, load. Where'd you go? Where is she? There she is. What do I do now?
Well, that just happened. My second game ever, and I already got a dub? Oh, you? Well, all of you astute, sweaty Fortnite players watching might have noticed that my final opponent kinda sucked ass. I mean, look at him. We're both in a completely open area, and this player can't even land a single hit on me. And they made it into the top 2? That's because... No matter how good you are at Fortnite, after every round, there's 1 winner and 99 losers. And if every player has an equal chance of winning, that would mean you're still losing 99% of the time. And if you were playing a video game where you lost 99% of the time, you would probably stop having fun and never play the game again. Or not, I don't know, I've never played Dark Souls. So what Epic Games does to remedy this is they fill up every match with bots who kind of suck sh**. This way, you can get some easy kills on other players and make it further into every game. At least you got 3 kills in 20th place, right? That doesn't feel as bad as getting 99th. However, the unintended consequence of this is that now, after every kill you get, there's a little thought in the back of your head thinking, did I actually kill someone with a soul, or is Fortnite going easy on me? So there's a pretty big chance that my first Fortnite kill, XXX Dark Tonic XXX, wasn't even a real person that could feel proud of me. Chances are, none of these other players are real.
Here are my opponents.
Eventually, we'll be at a high enough level where it'll start to feel like, you know, a challenge. We're just gonna keep trucking along. Let's start map.
No. Okay. Oh, I'm out. Cool. Hello?
Okay, I guess we'll chalk up those last 2 games to beginner's luck. Surely things will go differently in math.
A cabbage and a coconut. Cool. Let me just bite into that. And shotgun and shotgun and shotgun. Made me waste all my ammo, dude. Okay, anyone at all? Hello? Too easy! Too.
Technically speaking, no one has killed me yet. At least in match 2, I was the one who eliminated the last player, but matches 3 and 4 just handed me a crown on a fluffy pillow.
You know, I wanted to do this really cool thing where we looked at spreadsheets and tracked my progress, but all the data's gonna get kinda messed up if I just keep winning all the time. Why learn the game or develop a strategy if everything I'm doing results in a win? It's upsetting that I'm already perfect. I hope this is still a good idea for a video. We still have a whole lot more Fortnite to get through, so let's just see if we can stumble and fumble our way into even more victory.
Ah! Ah! Oh, this is what loss feels like.
I think those 3 wins in a row made me a little cocky. I mean, no one has been able to stop me, so I wasn't trying anything special. When I saw another player, I would just do my normal strategy of standing still and shooting, and it got me 15th place. But this does prove that I can be stopped. Finally, we've faced a worthy opponent. Sheeny Shear. Fuck you, Sheeny Shear. Oh well, I guess we couldn't win them all. I mean, I still have more wins than losses at this point. As long as the next 50 games go well, then I won't be complaining.
I was looking at the map, bro.
How do I thank the bus driver? I would love to thank them, but I unfortunately do not know the button to thank them.
Gee!
I don't know what this is, but I'm afraid to use it.
I don't know what that does! I don't know what that does! Whoa, 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 whoa! No. Oh boy. Oh no. Down. Ooh. Oh, oh. Please don't. Please don't. Oh. One of these days we're going to learn how to thank the bus driver.
Nine. Oh, you're not f***ing around?
Well, me neither.
I don't know what I'm doing, you guys. Wish I knew how to thank the bus driver. The guy. Oh. What is this? Medallion. Cool. I want you. Look at the camera, floof. Camera's right there, floof.
What the? What just happened?
I was in the middle of a grind. How come when I shoot people, it takes like 4 or 5 hits? I'm starting to get in heated gamer moments. Am I just bad at the game? Oh, I am bad at the game. Oh! Oh! What is this? How do I get you here? You got me. Cool. B?
Oh! It's B! That was bad. That was bad.
This match I started doing pretty well in.
We can't keep doing this. We can't.
I landed in Pleasant Plaza and got 3 kills without taking any damage.
We got the jump on him.
I started getting even more kills and was picking up some pretty good loot. I even picked up these 3 medallions, not knowing what they did. And before I knew it, there was only me and one person left.
There's only one person left?
This hadn't happened since those first 3 games, which I frankly didn't deserve to win.
Where are you?
I was upset, yes, but I can accept when I've been outplayed.
How did that happen?
In this match, I got my first and only kill with a cluster clinger right at the very start. Overall, I was able to get 9 kills this match, There were a lot of close calls in this game, but I was always able to find health packs and heal back up. As long as I stayed in the storm circle, I was going to let the other players come to me. And my patience paid off because once again, I ended up in the top two and I started to get nervous.
Oh, fiddlesticks. No, 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 no.
I made some dumb mistakes. Like, once again, not picking up those legendary guns that were on the ground. What? I only got 3 kills this match, but I made it to the top 3 with a legendary run-and-pump shotgun. If you've played Fortnite, you know this is the most superior shotgun out of all the shotguns. I saw the last 2 players fighting by the storm, and instead of waiting for them to kill each other, I sniped Banana Joe 934 from afar. I was in second place yet again, but this time I had the last player in my sights.
Where are you? Where are you? I know about that running over people trick. No!
I want to talk about the top 2 jitters. Dude, I can't describe how anxiety-inducing it is being one of the last 2 players alive. You have narrowly survived every challenge and bot thrown at you for the last 20 minutes, and now the only thing that stands between you and a victory royale is the best player in the game. Getting into the top 2, I would literally be shaking and making mistakes that I couldn't afford to make. With so many close games, I decided to call it a night, and as my head rested on my pillow, I only had one question on my mind. How? By this point, Fortnite had started to slip into my subconscious. I was having dreams about Fortnite. One time I was lying in bed and I heard this sound. And I thought, there's someone nearby. I need to kill them. I pretty much got the gist of Fortnite. I had been to all the places on the map. I knew what every gun did, but I couldn't get over the second place hump. I needed to elevate my Fortnite skills. I needed to consult the Is anyone going to interrupt me? No? Look, not getting outside help was never part of the challenge, okay? Is it fair that everyone else already knows the buttons when I didn't even know what button used the scope? How am I supposed to know that? No one ever told me you can pick up the business turret after it's been thrown. And I'll never be able to pick them up. Here is the official guide to Fortnite. It's full of useful information like telling me where Tilted Towers or Loot Lake is. Oh, here's something. Surviving the end game. It says you need to prepare to improvise. To survive this phase of the game, you'll want to have a few structures you can build. Okay, maybe this won't be helpful. Ah, here we go. You can claim a victory royale without building a single structure in the game, but you'll need sharp reflexes and to be able to move deftly to pull it off. Okay, so skill issue is what the official guidebook says. I was kind of hoping for some, I don't know, useful strategies. Something like, here's a link to an aimbot. So I decided to ask a real human for some help, and my friend Rush told me, hey, did you know there's a setting you can turn on that lets you visually see what direction noises are coming from? What? So now, even if my ears can't actually hear footsteps, the game will tell me, hey, there's footsteps to your right. Someone is definitely nearby. Now, this setting is for hearing impaired people. So is me using this setting as an able-bodied hearing man cheating, kind of? Yeah, kind of. But I need every bit of help I can get. And I bet most of you play with this setting on, too. And you hear just fine. Now, let's see if we can apply this useful tool as we head into Oh, I have some bad news. I don't normally work with external hard drives, so I didn't realize these things were made out of eggshells. I was storing all of my footage on an external hard drive, and I guess I forgot to put it on its tiny pillow or something, because after I stored over 300 gigs worth of footage onto it, it stopped working. I took it to a data recovery specialist, and they quoted me $950 to repair it.
Oh, boy. I mean, I gotta go for it. The stuff on this hard drive's priceless. But then they were like, actually, there's nothing we can do, idiot, loser. You see these pictures we sent you? That means it's too damaged beyond repair. What were you doing to this hard drive? Were you throwing it on the ground? Were you hitting it with a hammer? So, unfortunately, we will never get to see games 63 through 99.
Hey, are you crying?
No. Who are you?
I am your fairy Fortnite godmother. I'm here to help you.
Are you going to use magic to fix my hard drive?
What? Do you think I have magical powers?
I don't... Yes?
Magic can't change the fact that you saved all of your important, irreplaceable footage onto a single hard drive, stupid. But luckily, my child, you don't need any magic. You have Fortnite Reboot. Did you know that Fortnite automatically saves your last 50 or so matches as a replay file that you can go back and watch later? This is a miracle! Because of replay files, we didn't lose any gameplay footage. We did, however, lose the webcam, so you won't get to see my live reaction or witty commentary during any of these games, which sucks, I know. I did this whole bit where I kept losing, so I became a sweat.
We're cracked! We're going!
But I'm just happy we're able to recover any gameplay footage at all, and I've also learned to back everything up. So with that little hiccup taken care of, how did I do with visual sounds turned on? Well, let's take a look at match...
And boom. He's gone. Ooh. Take that medallion, and there's a bunch of legendary guns, and I actually grab two of them. Two legendary guns. Circle real small. And then... Victory Royale. Very anticlimactic fight. But actually, now that we have a replay... So, you, and me. So they have, like, very low health. You have this health. Yeah, gotta get out of the storm, bro. Get out of the storm. Couldn't make it out. Gator guy's the winner.
You might say that a win is a win, but I kind of wanted a win where I pulled the trigger to get. So I did pretty well in match 63, but match 64, I got 81st place. So, am I actually getting any better?
There goes my crown.
In match 65 and 66, I got second place back-to-back.
Here I am looking for the last guy. Here's the last guy sitting on the roof. Here's his business turret looking. Both are right here on top of each other. Don't see each other. We're running. I still don't see him. Ooh, turret gets a lot of damage on me. I run for cover in there. Turret still shoots me through the wall. And then this guy just waits for me to come out of the building. Yep. And then finishes me off.
Nothing really special happened for the next few games besides getting 99th place on match 73 and getting 79th place on match 79th, which was the only time that the place number matched the match number. So that's pretty cool, I think. But then big things happened in match 8. It had taken me so long to complete 100 games that Fortnite changed seasons. There was a new ancient Greek-themed update that's totally old news by the time I get this video done. Parts of the map changed, my favorite business turret was removed, and my level was reset to level 1. This was my first time playing in the new season. I was unfamiliar with all the new locations and items, but I managed to get 5 kills and make it to the top 2. Me and the last player were shooting each other on our own hills, and then I decided it was time for some finishing moves. Is the storm getting close? Because I think I hear some thunder!
Oh, look at that. Almost missed. Exploded the tree right behind him. And they're like, oh, we're doing a lightning fight? We can do a lightning fight. Bam, oh, and that's it. Oh, they didn't want to overdo it. Oh, that's nice.
Then, in my very next match, I got 6 kills and was once again in the top 2.
Oh, I hope it didn't glitch out right there.
I had done it. My very first Fortnite win.
We both, like, have not loaded our guns. She misses. I hit her. She misses again. Really? Look, we're both reloading at the same time. As soon as I'm done, boom! Final kill.
It didn't really feel like a clutched game, you know? There weren't really any pro-gamer moves. We were both running around fumbling to see who could load their gun first. But we're not getting points for style, okay? This is a win that I finally earned. Of course, you'll never get to see how I reacted in this moment. The best I can do is an artistic recreation. I kept grinding the 100 games to see if I could earn any more victories, and for a while, I couldn't even get back to the top two. I knew I was running out of chances to clutch out more wins until I played Match 98. Now, this footage is a little corrupted. I landed in Rebel's Roost and started exploring a house that isn't loading in the replay footage, and I found a legendary gun inside of a regular old chest. I know it sounds unbelievable, you just had to be there. Then I talked to an NPC that I'd never seen before, Mina. I gave her a job to be my buddy, and she did something I didn't know an NPC could do. Every 30 seconds, Mina would scan the nearby area, revealing anything important. Chests, ammo boxes, even other players would become illuminated. This was amazing. I had a legendary gun, and now with Mina's scanner, no one could sneak up on me. I understand why people play with hacks now. This power is amazing. I think I'm in love. I got to the top two, but once again, I couldn't keep my composure and choked right at the very end.
And then I'm healing up behind a rock. And then... And I didn't even see him over there. In a 1v1, I was unable to clutch it out.
That's now 8 times I've made it to second place, with only one of those times I was able to kill the last player. After getting 45th place in match 99, I decided it was time to revamp my strategy. For my 100th game, I was going to do something no other Fortnite player could do. I was going to study every game I ever played to see if I could find any patterns to help me win. What's a Fortnite coach? We can look back and learn from our mistakes. We can study the Oh yes, baby, it's spreadsheet time. My favorite time besides snack time. I don't know about you, but I had just as much fun filling out the spreadsheet as I did playing Fortnite. And this time, I didn't lose the footage. Now let's see if we can find anything useful in all these numbers. Taking a look at all the places we got, you can clearly see it's a little all over the place. When I started this quest, I was expecting to see a graph more like this, where I would start off bad and then over time get better and better, getting closer to the number one rank. But in Fortnite, skill level does not necessarily translate to a better placement. Sometimes you and another player land in the exact same spot, and the first gun you grab is a sniper rifle, and all you see is the magnified barrel of a shotgun, and other times you can make it to the top 25 without ever seeing another soul. I did notice that in my first 31 games, I was getting a pretty low placement, but then once I started to get the hang of the game, I would more consistently make it into the top 10. I mean, sometimes I would still die quickly, but it was less frequent. Now let's see if we can find a pattern in the data that would translate into getting a better place. Maybe the secret to getting in the top 10 is getting a lot of kills. If we compare the amount of kills I got each match with the placement, we see... Okay, I'm seeing a little bit of correlation here. The more kills we have, the better we tend to do. But sometimes I got 2 kills and made it to 79th place, and other times I got 1 kill and made it to the top 11. Technically speaking, you don't even need to get a single kill to get a victory royale if the other players are shit enough. But I think you'll be surprised to see what happens when we compare the placement with the length of every match. Now that's some correlation! The matches that were longer... we did better in. I think I'll apply this strategy to my 100th game. In order to not die, you have to stay alive. I'm a genius. Now let's shift gears and talk about every player who ever killed me. Boo! Here are all of their IP addresses, and here are their mother's houses, and most importantly, here is everyone's recorded playtime. Now we can determine who among my killers don't shower. And that'll make me feel better to losing to them. If we add up all of my killer's playtimes, we get an average playtime of 301 hours and 37 minutes. Now, gamers, if you've played a video game for over 300 hours, are you considered a sweat? I honestly don't know where we should draw the line, but let's just say for the sake of this video, if you're above a 301 average, you're a sweat. However, since it took forever to make this video and Fortnite changed seasons yet again, we can check back in on these gamers in 3 months to see if the players we deemed as sweats do indeed play more Fortnite than everyone else. Some people played a little, some people played a lot, and someone even quit the game entirely after killing me. Now, I don't want to sound mean, but these gamers played an average of 50 hours and 6 minutes of Fortnite. I said mean, which is like what, 33 minutes a day or 3.9 hours a week? That just sounds like a nice Saturday. Now, what can we do with all this information? Nothing. This is just a reminder to set your account to private because people on the internet are weird. Now, that's all well and good, but which gun is the most deadly to us? Here's a list of everything I ever died to in the game. Looking at the data, we actually have a tie for most deadly gun, with shotguns and ARs both getting 30 kills on me, and the most deadly rarity being a pretty close tie with rare guns getting 24 kills and epic guns getting 25 kills. So we want to be extra cautious if our opponent has a rare or epic shotgun or AR. Someone write that down. I really wanted to see if there was something in the data that would definitively prove that I was improving at the game. I wasn't happy with just looking at the placements because they were all over the place, but I think I found something that does indeed prove I am getting better. My accuracy. Plugging in all the data, we get this scatter plot, which looks exactly like a target I would shoot during practice. But if we look at the scatterplot trend, my average accuracy at game 1 was around 22%, and by game 99, we're getting an accuracy of 31%, boys! That's 9% more accurate! That's improvement in my book! This abundant arithmetic is all well and good, but there's something we're missing. Which gun that I was shooting gets the most kills? Oh, you'll have to excuse me. I gotta get going. I'm hosting the... How are you guns all doing tonight? Before I give out these awards, I would like to give an honorary best assist trophy to the business turret. On record, the business turret was able to assist with 15 different kills. Unfortunately, business turret is unable to be here, so Porta Bunker will be accepting this award on their behalf. Alright, in third place, with 24 kills, we have Rare Shotguns. Thank you, Rare Shotguns. You're always there for me. In second place, with 27 kills, we have the Uncommon AR. Nice job, buddy. Keep up the good work. And the winner of the 2024 Fortnite Gun Awards are, with 33 kills, my eyes see the Uncommon Shotgun. So, going into game 100, we need to make sure we're equipped with a shotgun that's uncommon. Actually, this whole thing's stupid. Just because I got the most kills with the uncommon shotgun doesn't mean it's the best gun. It means it's the most common. I mean, uncommon. I'm sorry for wasting everyone's time. Let's just get back into the... By this point, I knew that I lost the footage for games 63 through 99. This was my last chance to get a victory royale on camera. It's do or die. For this legendary match, my girlfriend did something really sweet and gifted me a skin of a guy in an alligator costume, meaning I could finally be the real Gator Guy 333 and still not spend any money on a free game. Thanks, babe. During the first 99 matches, I would sometimes add silly little commentary even though no one was ever going to watch the footage.
Honey, did you leave the chest on the kitchen counter again?
But for this momentous match, I was going to remain completely silent. I needed all of my focus to be on the game. I landed in Zeus's Pantheon and immediately got 3 kills. A very close call. One more bullet would have done the trick. The most important match of my life almost ended with me in 84th place. So, admittedly, combing through the 21 hours of footage to fill out my spreadsheets took quite some time. So much time that they changed the game once again. They added a new item called the Legendary Banana. What does that do? Is it a weapon? Food items normally heal you, so why is it legendary? I decided to take the banana with me and figure out what it did later. After not seeing any chatter, I headed out of the Pantheon to a bunker opening nearby. I waited a bit to see if the coast was clear, then I made my way down and looted up. Heading outside, I saw an NPC. Ooh, I think someone's about to get a job. I couldn't find the source of the bullets, so I hopped into a sports car and drove away. But when I got out, I guess now's a good time to learn what this legendary banana does. It was over. My 100th match, and all I got was 16th place. And that's when I learned you can read a description of what an item does in the tab menu. 100 games in, and I'm still learning new things. But it was too little, too late. My 100th game was a complete failure. Or was it? You see, I had set out to play Fortnite 100 times, and after this match, I had only played no build 99 times. Remember, my very first game was with builds on. Are we really going to count that one? For one, it totally messes with the spreadsheet that I have 99 no-build games and one build game. So this next one, this is my actual 100th game. For the spreadsheet. I landed an old reliable Rebel's Roost to pay a visit to my favorite NPC, Mina. With her on my team, we were unstoppable. Inside, I randomly found a Midas service station that let me upgrade my rare shotgun into a legendary one. I didn't know you could upgrade guns. 100 games in and we're still learning new things. We made it to the top 6 with 4 kills. Mina used an ingenious strategy of trying to shoot them through the ground. I like the spirit, Mina, but I don't think it's gonna work. We faced off and I blasted them with my legendary shotgun. 5 people left. I healed up and waited for someone to appear on Mina's scanner. Finally, we spotted someone. 2 someones. A 2v2, huh? I tried to move to a better position, but a player started to flank me. Both of us started blasting, but I came out victorious with only 8 health points to spare. 3 people left. I healed up as fast as I could and then spotted another player. I used the new River Styx skulls to jump forward, trying to shorten the distance between us. I got 1 shotgun hit on them, but they immediately threw down a Shield Bubble Jr. No one can fire bullets in or out of a Shield Bubble Jr., so I knew the only way I was going to get this other player would be from the inside.
Dude, I am
And those shaky nerves were probably the reason I died to an NPC. She was the goddess of hunting, sure, but still an NPC nonetheless. My NPC was shooting the ground. Where were you, Mina? So, I know you were all hoping to see a victory royale on camera, but I was never able to successfully win one. Or could I? Remember my second match that was against a bunch of bots? Are we really going to count that one? I mean, I wasn't even playing against real people, okay? I think we should strike that one from the record, too. From now on, only matches with real people count. In preparation for my actual 100th match, I tried some meditation to calm my nerves down. Okay, that time, I wasn't doing my meditation right. Okay, this... That one was bullshit. They got a super awesome gun right at the very start. We're not counting that one, okay? This... Wait, other players can see minus scans? People know when they're getting scanned? You know, something strange happened in Match 100 Part 5. Early on in the game, as everyone was scrambling to get good loot, I visually heard some footsteps outside, and I jumped out a window and saw a lowlife default skin running helplessly into a wall, holding nothing but a pickaxe. My ranger pistol was drawn, pointed right at the back of their head, but for some reason, I didn't pull the trigger. I knew that if I were to achieve a victory royale, that eventually this default skin would have to be eliminated, but I took pity on them. We're all trapped in this endless cycle of violence. To what end? To be the last one standing in a giant death battle, only to die in a merciless storm? Also, they didn't want to spend money on a free game. You know, I get that. So, I did the only thing a Fortnite player could do to communicate intentions of peace. I danced for them. They slowly turned, still wielding a pickaxe they could have very easily swung at me during my dance solo. And then they did the unthinkable. They danced back to a copyrighted song that I can't play. And then the other player got out a piece of paper and drew a heart. While we stood there getting notifications that somewhere on the map, PAX Player 25, Shotgun, Solo Spy 86, and Ginger Ninja 2906 eliminated Gaelic Gator 12. Oh no, a fellow gator. Me and this other player were sharing a moment. A moment of friendship. Of course, this is still a battlefield, and just like the World War I soldiers on December 26th, I had to get back to shooting my friend. I gave this default skin somewhat of a fighting chance by giving them a handgun and letting them take the first shot. And they weirdly had dog shit aim, like non-human levels of bad, so I might have just shared this intimate moment with a bot. So even though we couldn't see a victory royale on camera, maybe we could do something better. Is it possible I had been playing Fortnite all wrong? I mean, not including those first 30 games where I was definitely playing wrong, but maybe the real Fortnites were the friends we made along the way. I'm done with trying to win. My new quest is to make at least one Fortnite friend. And to do this, I need ways of communicating to other players my peaceful, non-threatening intentions. I need to buy more emotes. I need to spend money on a free game.
Babe! Can I use your credit card?
The only emotes available in the shop were these three dances. They're not really the friendliest dances, but they were the only ones available. So let's see if we can take these new learned dance moves and see how far we can get with the power of friends. While all the players were waiting for the battle bus, I wanted to do something I was never able to do before. Dance with another player. So many times, other players would come up to me and do a cool dance, and all I could do back was the lame default dance. So I went up to this girl in a yellow jumpsuit and started to dance. We showed each other that we both had zero crowns. Oh wait, she's got one. And I think my dancing impressed her because she went from swinging on a cloud to playing the guitar. So, as first dances go, it was pretty successful. When the match started, I headed to old reliable Rebel's Roost. And the first thing I did was stock up in the gun room. Okay, I know I'm trying to make friends this round, but sometimes people don't want to be friends. I made a rule for myself that if I saw another player, I would dance at them, but then if they started shooting me, then friendship quest is over, we're switching to they don't deserve my kindness quest. Okay, I think that's fair. That's a healthy boundary. I headed outside and saw my first potential friend. I tried showing them my new dance moves, but they weren't too impressed. They started shooting me with the aim that only a bot should have, and I had no choice but to end their program. The next potential friend I tried to make tried to shoot me while I was dancing, and maybe I was unintentionally matrix dodging all their bullets, but they couldn't seem to hit me either. I decided to recruit Mina again, thinking that her scanner would be useful to help find other potential friends, not realizing that she wasn't on a friendship quest right now, so she would be trying to shoot our potential friends. So if you're trying to do a friendship quest, then don't hire NPCs. I danced on top of portable bunkers out in the open, but there weren't any people to enjoy my dance moves. And before I knew it, me and Mina were in the top three, and I started to get excited. Maybe a little too trigger happy.
This is just my heart rate, dude.
I saw one of my last two opponents, potential friends. I threw down a bunker and started to throw down on top of it. And as they were backing up, they started to point their sniper scope at me. Now, maybe they were looking at me through their scope thinking, whoa, is this guy with the cool skin actually dancing in the middle of a fight? That's awesome. I'm going to be his friend. But I didn't give him that benefit of the doubt. They hadn't technically shot me first, so I was breaking my only rule, but I didn't want to give them a free sniper headshot on me, dude. So in self-defense, I threw some lightning at them and finished them off with an epic DMR. An assist? That would mean I never showed this last player my friendly dance moves, but they took a shot at me, so this is fair game. I'll admit, I kinda lost sight of the friendship quest. I was no longer trying to befriend this player because I felt so close to achieving a victory royale. She came down from a tower, and I finally got a good view of who this last player was. And I was filled with so much bloodlust and darkness that I didn't even recognize her. It was the same girl I met in the lobby. The first player I had ever danced with. The girl in the yellow jumpsuit. I don't know the names of skins. I may not have recognized her, but I think she recognized me. She got on top of a hill and threw down all of her weapons and started to do the same swinging cloud emote she did in the lobby. I still hadn't realized what she was doing, and I took a shot at her. Luckily, I missed. That's that 31% accuracy right there. Only then did I realize what I was doing.
Wait.
And I was disgusted. I had set out to make a Fortnite friend, and now when someone extends an olive branch to me, I shoot them? I quickly danced back at her from afar. Mina took a shot at her, but I told her to wait back and threw a portable bunker over her. I didn't want to count my chickens or anything, but I think this is my very first Fortnite friend. I made my way around the hill, ignoring the dropped victory crown. This match was never about winning some crown. My new Fortnite friend jumped down the hill, and I crouched down to show how small and non-threatening I was. For a brief moment, we were the last two survivors in a giant battle royale, and neither of us wanted to hurt the other. I didn't realize what my new Fortnite friend was doing. She was purposely heading into the storm, forcing me to win. Goodbye, Fortnite friend. I'll always remember you. Oh, wait, she's coming back. Did she change her mind?
Okay.
No! My friend! Maybe if someone hadn't hit her with a bolt of lightning, she would have survived the storm. But either way, she sacrificed herself, and I got what I always wanted. A victory royale caught on camera.
Not like this! Not like this! Are you kidding me? No!
Pretty poetic that the only time I tried to make friends was the time I won. Not a lot of games have a fun free-to-play version, but Fortnite is totally that game. It's constantly getting new updates and is an absolute blast to play with friends. Parents can play it with their kids, millennials can play it with Gen Z, and everyone can have a grand old time chasing after that crown. But for me, I'm gonna keep on making Fortnite friends. And lastly, if you or someone you know is good at fixing hard drives, I will gladly send you this hard drive, and if you can get the files from it, I will give you $950. Please don't look around on that flash drive, especially don't look in the folder called taxes, because that's where my important tax information is, so just fix it and just let me know, okay? Thank you all for watching this video about me playing Fortnite a lot. Now that it's all done, I'm gonna go play some more Fortnite. Are you enjoying the new season of Fortnite? Let me know in the comment box down below. That question will be relevant till the end of time, I think, so that's good. Thank you to my amazing team for getting this incredibly short video out in a timely manner. If you enjoyed a video game challenge video, let me know. Maybe next time I'll do 100 ranked matches of Fortnite. Anyways, don't really have any announcements. Be sure to wear your seatbelt. See you later.
I don't go outside that much. Ergo, I don't see people that much. Ergo, I don't get recognized in public that much. Now you might think, James, really? You get recognized? But you're just some college dropout sitting in the closet right now making cartoons on the internet. People recognize you and talk to you and ask for your autograph? Yeah, I thought the same thing. I don't even show my face that much in my videos, so I don't know how people remembered what I looked like. When I first started drawing comics 4 years ago, I was never expecting that later people would be coming up to me and nervously asking me to write my name down on a piece of paper. Now, can I just talk about this? I don't have a signature, and if I'm going to be signing things, I really should start thinking about getting one. I signed 6,000 cards, and on all of them, I just wrote James and put a little smiley face.
I probably wrote my name out more times that week than I did my entire life. Also, another thing, I have terrible handwriting. You'd think since I'm good at drawing cartoon characters, I should be good at drawing letters of the alphabet. Whenever I sign something, I always have to warn my fans, I'm really sorry, I have bad handwriting. And they always say the same thing, it's fine. No, it's not fine. I'm about to ruin whatever this pen touches. I don't get recognized nearly as many times as you might think. Like, I can go to the grocery store and not get recognized at all. Although, I am noticing that I get weird looks from kids now. I don't know if that's because of YouTube, though. But if you do see me out in the wild, then by all means, come up to me and say hi. Even if you're not sure it's me, still come up and ask. Even if I'm on my phone, just slap it out of my hand and I'll say, dude, what the heck? And then you say, the odd one's out, and I'll say, maybe. I'm a pretty chill guy, okay? The only time I can think of it not being okay to come up and talk to me is if I'm asleep. Don't wake me up, guys. One time I was at the dollar store, not a proud moment in my life, and later I went home and someone on Twitter asked, hey, were you just at the dollar store at this address? And I said, maybe. Another time I was at Chipotle, and I know in a previous video I said, hashtag boycott Chipotle because he didn't hire James like 3 years ago. But I'm a weak man. I might have to call off the boycott. So anyway, I'm standing in line to get a burrito, and I see a girl sitting down in the chairs looking at her phone, and she sort of looked like a girl that I went to high school with. Is that Rachel? I didn't say anything, though. I got my food, and as I was about to leave, I glanced back at the girl, and she was looking at me. We both had that look in our eye like, yeah, we know each other. So I went over to her, and I said, hi, Rachel, are you James from The Odd Ones Out? You didn't go to high school with her. Okay, well, I'm gonna go now. Good luck on your own. Yeah, I am. What's your name? Maria? My name's James. You already knew that. If you're watching, Maria, when I saw you, I thought we went to high school together. You looked like someone who was on my improv team. So I recently went to PAX South with my friend Eugene. That's not his real name. I asked him if he was okay with me saying his real name in this video. He said he was fine with it, but I think calling him Eugene would be funnier. If you don't know what PAX is, it's basically Comic-Con, but only for games. They have card games and board games, but it's mostly video games. I've known Eugene for about a year now, but I've only ever talked to him over the internet. One day he asked, hey, do you want to go to PAX South with me? It's in my hometown. And I said, sure, because I think that's what friends do. I'm going to leave out a lot of details about what I did at PAX because I think that can be a video all by itself. But just traveling there, I was recognized. I got on the airplane to go to Texas and this girl and her mom sat next to me. And I noticed that the girl's iPad wallpaper is Markiplier and Jacksepticeye. Part of me wanted to say, oh, so you watch YouTube videos? Do you know me? But that's a tacky thing to say. I thought if she knew me, she'll say something. Don't start off conversations like that. We went the whole flight without saying anything to each other, and then when we landed, Mom said to me, hey, my daughter thinks you make YouTube videos. Maybe. On Friday, Eugene had to go to classes before PAX, so I went with him just so I could go straight to the convention. One of his classes was in a computer lab. I sat down next to Eugene's friend, and the computer was already logged on, so I was worried that I might be stealing someone else's spot. Then some other guy walks into class, and he looks at me and goes, whoa. And I said, oh, is this your spot? You're the odd ones out.
Maybe.
I didn't know him, but he knew me. Which is weird to think about. Of all the places you'd expect to meet a YouTuber, your computer lab wouldn't be one of them. I started messing around on Microsoft Paint. I wasn't paying attention to the teacher. I drew a landscape with a horse. It was beautiful. And then I drew my cartoon character with a mouse. Also, side note, this is why you don't draw with a mouse, kids. And Eugene's friend saw it and said, hey, that looks like a YouTuber my brother watches. And I said, huh. Weird. And then I went to PAX, I got recognized a lot there. I almost got kicked out because of all the people who recognized me were causing a fire hazard. After PAX was over, I went to the airport to go home. I got recognized by another kid who didn't even go to PAX, and also apparently another person recognized me and took this stalkerish photo and tweeted it to me. You could have said, hey, I was just playing on my DS. I wasn't doing anything important. And then while I was making this video, I got recognized again at Target. Not including VidCon, PAX, and the junior high that I tutor at sometimes, those were all the times that I got recognized. That I remember. At PAX, there is this boy who came up to me and said, you at the bed until you are 8 years old. He was bringing up a joke in the peeing video where I said if we ever meet each other in real life, you're not allowed to bring it up. But the kid was saying it obviously as a joke. I knew he was messing around with me, so I laughed and I pushed him away like, eh, get out of here, you knucklehead. But then later I was thinking, I probably pushed that kid a little too hard. I hope I didn't make a bad first impression. So, if I pushed you at PAX, I was doing it in a loving manner.
In conclusion, if you see me out in public, don't be afraid to come up to me and say, "Hey, James, you left your house. Good job." I'm a pretty normal person.
I like to think that my videos, for the most part, have greatly improved in quality from the past year. Let's watch a clip of my first video. Roll the clip.
So you know those books you make in elementary school that you write as a class? And some publishing company makes them into a real book.
So you know those books you make in elementary school?
Man, I don't think I could sound less insecure. And I was 18 when I made that video. I was legally old enough to get married. So I'm always trying to improve the quality of my videos. I've gotten a better microphone, I've learned to level out my audio, I like to think my drawings are more lively and move more, but sometimes when I record, I tend to smack my lips. And I always thought it was because my mouth was dry. So then I would chug an entire water bottle, but I would still sometimes have smacky lips. So I thought, is it possible I could be drinking too much water? Is that even a thing? Maybe I should drink Gatorade. So no big deal, right? First I Google how to stop lip smacking. And since I couldn't find anything that had pictures...
How can you read this? There's no pictures.
I decided to ask YouTube instead. I don't know, maybe someone out there makes voice acting tutorials. But instead, I stumbled upon something indescribable.
Tonight is the return of the beloved lip smacking.
So there was this about 14-year-old girl just getting
real close to the microphone and smacking her lips.
And apparently there's a lot higher demand for people who smack their lips than people who don't. Jeez, I don't even know why I tried to fix that problem. But you're probably thinking, James, this is just one video, right? This is just one person making a YouTube video, right? There's not like an entire community dedicated to...
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR. This is the entire Wikipedia page printed out with notes. You know, I bet at least some people watching this already know what it is. And you didn't tell me about it. What, did you think I wasn't going to find out?
And my college charges 5 cents to print a page. So I spent 65 cents printing out this Wikipedia article. Money I'm never getting back. So what is ASMR? Basically, it's a video of someone whispering into a microphone and making certain sounds. For about 20 to 60 minutes. Now you might be thinking, why? Why do they do this? The Wikipedia article says that the purpose of ASMR is to give listeners sort of a tingly sensation in the head, and some people describe it as akin to a mild electric current. The best way I can think to describe it is, you know those Bob Ross videos? Remember how you just loved to watch them even though you couldn't paint? Why did you watch them? Yeah, you watched him because you loved his soft, gentle voice, and the sounds of the paintbrush on the canvas, and then when he beat his paintbrush on that little thing, you can beat me, Bobby. I think that's what ASMR is trying to create. It's basically supposed to give you the same feeling when you watch a Bob Ross video.
Man, you're watching those videos a lot differently than me.
Now, since I read the Wikipedia page, let me tell you some useless facts about it. The first case of ASMR was in a book written in 1925 that said, "With a roughness in her voice like a grasshopper, which rasped his spine deliciously and sent running up into his brain waves of sound." The frick? In this part about evolutionary history, David Hurin states that the ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic.
Faith, what is this word? Altruistic?
Altruistic. The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic attention, and has strong similarities to physical grooming in primates, who derive enormous pleasure, borderlining on euphoria, when being groomed by a grooming partner, not to get clean, but rather to bond with each other. So that begs the question, do dogs like it? ASMR was officially created in 2008, but it didn't get popular until a Facebook group along with a subreddit was created in 2010. Now, it wasn't always called ASMR. Instead, people used phrases like brain massage, head tingle, brain tingle, spine tingle, and my personal favorite, attention-induced head orgasm.
What are you doing with those grasshoppers, ma'am?
But a lot of people didn't want to use orgasm in the name, because then people would think that this ASMR stuff is pretty sexual, which it totally isn't, you guys, except in 2015 when people started making a new genre of ASMR videos called ASMR Otica. And something else that's worth noting on the Wikipedia page, the popularity of ASMR videos featuring women does substantially exceed those created by male performers. However, there are some popular male ASMRists, and not all video creators are heterosexual. So can I not make ASMR videos? Is that what it's saying?
So the creator of the Facebook group back in 2010 coined the term autonomous sensory meridian response. Autonomous meaning that it's spontaneous, sensory meaning the senses or sensation, and meridian
meaning orgasm.
I'm not making that up. Now, the word meridian doesn't mean orgasm at all. But in the Wikipedia article, it says, Alan chose the word meridian, mistakenly believing that it was a kinder way of saying orgasmic.
Look, it's even on our blog. So you're telling me this whole time, people have been using ASMR to mean climax, and that's not even what it means.
Okay, some other things in the Wikipedia article I want to talk about is that apparently not everyone experiences ASMR. There's also a type of ASMR called binaural recording, where performers use two microphones and place them where your ears would be. So it's extra creepy.
Look, I'm lip smacking right now.
Another popular theme is that these videos do a lot of role-playing, specifically clinical role-playing. Now, I'm someone who never really got into the whole role-playing experience, except when Captain Sparkles does it. Come on, where's part five? Let's read the wiki!
The ASMRists provide clinical or medical services, including routine general medical examinations. The creator of these videos make no claim to the reality of what is depicted, and the viewer is intended to be aware that they are watching and listening to a simulation, performed by an actor.
Yeah, I don't think we can really use the word actor, Wikipedia.
Okay, what else? There's little scientific work done on it. Some people say that it's great for fighting insomnia and anxiety, but others say, no, it's not. But I mean, it's not like it's bad for you. And there has been one song made to trigger ASMR, but I listened to it. I don't think song is the best word for it. It's more just normal ASMR audio. Just because it was released on an album doesn't make it a song, Wikipedia.
And there's one comment on this video that I think sums up ASMR pretty well.
I'm extremely uncomfortable.
I had no idea that ASMR was even a thing. Did you know it was a thing? I didn't. Heck, even College Humor made a parody ASMR video. I just want to make things clear. I'm not hating on people who make ASMR videos or even people who like to watch it.
And I'm certainly not jealous that some of these people have hundreds of thousands of subscribers and millions of views and all they're doing is just brushing a microphone for 20 minutes.
But guys, I think this ASMR thing is getting a little out of hand. Keep in mind that all these videos are about 15 minutes to an hour long. We have this girl with a southern accent singing I'm Blue and Numa Numa to remove a curse from you.
Numa Numa Numa, yay, I'm blue, dubba ding dubba da.
Inaudible whispering and tongue clicking, a couple of dentist roleplays, a library book return roleplay, eating Chinese food, a couple of Yu-Gi-Oh card readings, a Minecraft let's play, a Five Nights at Freddy's tribute, Undertale, a Mario Maker let's play, evening with a vampire, the Joker, Satan, alien abduction for men, and torture roleplay. Really? You could type ASMR and then type anything after that and you'll get something.
You think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created?
And what's doubly weird is that all of these videos are recent. Like, they were made in 2015 or even 2016. Well, obviously Undertale and Mario Maker are recent. But Shrek? Shrek?
Shrek.
But just to finish things up, I just want to get something off my chest. This Undertale ASMR was pretty good. Compared to the other ones. You still might be thinking, yeah, it's pretty weird, James. Yeah, it is pretty weird. We've gotten pretty deep in the weirdness with those alien ones. And they have almost 1 million views. I just think this one deserves more views. You know, I just want one ASMR video to be like 40 minutes long. And then in the middle somewhere, the person just screams. Like really hardcore screams. Yeah.
James.
Hey, Dad, I kind of have a weird request.
Okay.
Can you film the dogs with headphones in them and then send me the video?
You mean dogs wearing earbuds?
Yeah. Make sure to film it horizontally.
I don't think they won't keep earbuds in their ears.
Science fair.
I was talking to a friend saying, oh, I know, I can do a video about the science fair and, you know, talk about how much it sucks. And she said, oh, at my school, we didn't do the science fair.
What?
That got me wondering. Did other people not do the science fair? So I did my own science experiment on Twitter. I ran a poll and asked you guys if you even did the science fair and whether or not you enjoyed doing it. And 58% of you said you didn't have to do the science fair. Like, that was way more than I expected. That's the majority. I've renamed this group of people the lucky ones. And when I asked if you enjoyed doing it, 21% of you said you did enjoy it, and 21% of you said you didn't. I know Twitter polls aren't the most accurate sources of data, but I think it's safe to say that this is a pretty split issue. Now, I'm in the 21% of people who didn't enjoy the science fair. And don't get me wrong, I love science. Well, okay, that might not be true. I really hated biology and chemistry. That was just a mess. But physics was okay. Maybe I don't like science. I just like space and watching these. Bill and Neil, they're my buddies. Except Neil did hurt my feelings one time. We'll get back to that later. Alright, so let me briefly go over what the science fair is for you lucky ones who didn't have to deal with that. Apparently, it's a very American thing, right guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we started doing them, I want to say around 4th grade, and we would do this every year up until the 10th grade. The whole class would spend all day researching a topic that interests them, and then we would have to come up with a question that we could run an experiment on. An example of these questions are, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? What color light produces the most heat? How does the shape of a rocket's fins affect its travel? All of which are projects I did. Basically, this was supposed to teach you about the scientific method, but what it really did was teach us how to procrastinate and make up data. And on paper, you might think, oh, that sounds like fun. I wish my school did the science fair. No! Here are some flaws with the science fair. First, you got the option to work with a partner. And of course, you want to work with a partner so you can split up the work and not do as much. Now, since I didn't have any friends, I would partner up with someone that no one else wanted to partner up with. But they wouldn't do any of the work. I only did the science fair with a partner once. From 5th grade on, I did my science fair projects alone. The second problem is that we had to come up with a question all on our own. And you gotta understand, we were just kids. We don't think as cognitively as scientists do, okay? Just a couple years ago, we still believed in Santa Claus. Except for me, my family didn't do Santa Claus. And now you want us to wonder if the ratio of a cylinder will affect its buoyancy? Like, come on. And also, we don't have access to any resources. You know, the science fair is a lot like an episode of Mythbusters. But what sets apart the Mythbusters from your average fourth grader is that they're really smart engineers who have access to explosives, while we can't even drive to Walmart ourselves. We have to ask our parents to take us. One year, I wanted to do an experiment on a certain type of soil, so I did research, I wrote everything all up, but then when I went to Home Depot to buy the soil, they didn't even have it! So I had to pick a new topic and start all over again. Now do you see why I think the science fair sucks? So okay, I think it would have been better in elementary school if we were assigned a question. I know the whole point of these things is about discovery, but we're all stupid, okay? I guess if you were anything like me and you chose a crappy question, you'll have a bad science fair. My very first science fair, after all day researching possible questions, me and my partner came up with a question, what time of the day is the hottest? Now, I already know the answer to this question, and in fourth grade, I'm sure I already knew the answer to this question too. It's noon. Like, I don't need to run an experiment on that. In fact, I can just go to Google and seriously just type weather and boom, there's my data right there. No need for an experiment. But the science fair isn't just finding the answer to your question. No, 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 no. First, after you research the topic, you have to write a hypothesis. A hypothesis is basically you guessing what you think the result of the experiment will be, but you don't write it down as I think this will happen. No, you write it like you know what's gonna happen. A formula. Formula, science. For a perfect hypothesis is if blank, then blank because blank. Let's use my battery experiment. I said, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? So after doing research about how batteries work, a hypothesis for this experiment would be, if two AA batteries are used at different temperatures, then the battery in the hot temperature will not last as long because the battery's fluid will evaporate, which damages the internal structure of the battery. Oh, and spoiler alert, no, it doesn't. I put two batteries outside, two in the freezer, I let them sit, and then I plugged them into my Game Boy Advance, and they lasted the exact same amount of time. I learned nothing. So you also have to write up the materials you use for the experiment, then you have to write up the steps to do the experiment, the procedures, and you also have to write an introduction, basically just bullcrapping what you're going to do. Then you do the experiment, aka the fun part. Make sure you write down your results because you have to make a graph. You have to. How do you make a graph to show that batteries at different temperatures lasted the same amount of time? they did. You think you're done, right? But no, you gotta write up the results as if your graph didn't already perfectly depict that, and a conclusion. The conclusion is like the most insulting part of the science fair. You basically go through this checklist of questions that you answer. Was your hypothesis correct? No, my hypothesis was not correct. What mistakes could you have made in your experiment? I don't know, maybe I took the batteries out of the cold and hot and put them in a room temperature Game Boy, and in a couple of minutes they both went to a room temperature. I don't know. How can others use this information you found? What do you mean? All the batteries lasted the same. I don't think anyone is going to put their batteries in their freezer to have literally no effect. All right, and then you take everything you wrote, print it out, and then slap it onto a poster board. And everyone, and I mean everyone, would use construction paper as a border around the text to give the poster board a good aesthetic. I think the second most fun part of the science fair was choosing what word art font you would use for your title. Oh, and by the way, the teachers told us to have a creative title to catch people's attention. Like, that was part of the assignment. We got graded on the title. Basically, they were telling us to create puns for a grade. If you're doing a project that's measuring plant growth, Ready, Set, Grow, that was a very popular choice. And then everyone took their poster boards and presented it in front of the whole class. Those were the three most boring days of science ever. Except for the day you presented. That was the most stressful day. And then after all of that, everyone in the school put their poster board up in the cafeteria and, you know, then it was fun to walk around and see how other people decorated their poster board, and you could always tell whose mom helped them. So, overall, I didn't have a good time. Those 21% of people who did enjoy it, I'm glad you liked it. But me and the other 21% of people think you're huge nerds. And when I asked that Twitter question, I had some people messaging me saying, yeah, I got third place and all I had was a cup of dirt, ha 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 ha. And that made me wonder, wait, it was a competition? So I think the key to a good science fair is to come up with a good question and also do a topic that you actually enjoy. One science fair, I did an experiment on rockets, and I had a blast. That would have been a good title. But for another year, I did What Color Light Is the Hottest? I just shined a lamp at a thermometer and switched out the bulbs. I know I'll let Neil say what he thinks about that whole project.
Okay, red light is warmer than blue light. Interesting discovery, but not exactly revolutionary.
Neil, yeah, just completely discredit all my research. I'm fine. So, moral of the story, if you need an idea for a science fair project, do it on rockets. You don't even need a question, just launch model rockets. For some reason, everybody thinks butterflies are better than moths. We make children's books about butterflies, we use them as metaphors of change. You might be an ugly caterpillar now, but soon you'll grow into a beautiful butterfly. We go into fields and frolic around trying to catch them, and some people even have a collection of them. Granted, the people who do collect them do so by impaling the butterflies, but whatever, it's still a compliment. How many other insects can say that they get this much affection? Maybe praying mantises. Where I come from, every time you see a praying mantis, you have to point it out like, whoa, guys, look, a praying mantis! And then you just look at it. Anyway, back to the point. Moths, on the other hand, are like the white trash versions of butterflies. Even though moths and butterflies are practically the same creature, for some reason we give moths a bad rap. We laugh at them for flying into light bulbs. Butterflies would do that too if they want to sleep at night. Moths are so attracted to bright light that they'll follow it even if it kills them. You might think that this sort of behavior makes them stupid, but I like to think that this just shows how dedicated they can be. We also get mad at moths for eating our clothes, but if butterflies like the taste of our clothing, they wouldn't hesitate to chomp down on our laundry. Actually, butterflies probably think that they're too good for your clothing. They only eat the fine things in life, like flowers. You hear that? Butterflies think they're too good for your t-shirts. In Arizona, we have your normal run-of-the-mill moths. You know the type, small, gray. They look like a paper airplane made by someone who didn't know how to make a paper airplane. But we also have a moth called the white-limed sphinx moth. And these moths are like the Godzilla of the moth world. Which, actually, I'm pretty sure there is a giant moth in the Godzilla world. Mothra. This again just shows how much we don't like moths. We turn them into city-destroying monsters. When will the hate end? I'm sure when they filmed Mothra's scenes in the Godzilla movie, they didn't even use any special effects. They just used a normal white-lined sphinx moth. Those things could beat up hummingbirds if they wanted. One night when I was 5 years old, one of these big boys was hanging around at our porch light, cause, you know, moths, they just love themselves some glowing balls of heat. And then when someone opened the door, the moth saw all the other light inside and just flew straight in. More light?! This place is absolutely glimmering!
Its fate was sealed as soon as it crossed over the threshold.
I don't know what the moth did once he was inside our house, but whatever it was, it sure tired him out. Because the next morning, my sister and I found him on the kitchen windowsill just lying there, doing absolutely nothing. He was probably thinking about the outside world and being with his moth brethren, but he'd pretty much given up trying to escape. Because me and my sister just scooped him up and put him into a jar, and he became our new pet. My sister decided to name him Harry. Now, some moths are actually quite hairy. Harry, but this moth wasn't Harry at all. So that name didn't make any sense, but we were five, so it didn't have to.
Hey guys, don't get too attached to Harry.
We poked holes in the lid, we put leaves and sticks in his jar, which might have been a good idea if he was still a caterpillar, but I don't think moths eat leaves. Do they eat leaves? We probably should have just put in a t-shirt. We thought we were taking good care of him. My mom apparently didn't like Harry. She said, I have a good idea. Why don't you take Harry to your kindergarten class tomorrow and, I don't know, maybe he can be the class pet there. This is back when I thought my mom had good ideas. So we decided to take Harry to school, because think of how cool you would be as a five-year-old showing all your classmates the giant moth you captured. Looking back at the situation, having a class pet whose lifespan that won't make it to the end of the school year isn't a smart idea. The teacher probably didn't want to have to come to school one day and explain to a room full of five-year-olds why the class pet was lying on its back and not moving. So the teacher suggested, what if we release Harry at recess? Now, a lot of kids' movies that have animals in them, the animals usually don't like being captured. The animals want to be free and live out in the wild. Think Finding Nemo, Spirit, Happy Feet, Free Willy. It was common knowledge to every five-year-old that all the creatures walking on this green earth wanted to live in the wild. So we were more than happy to put Harry back in his home. When it came time for recess, we all walked outside and were excited to be part of the newly instituted Catch and Release Moth Program. We were like those people who put beached whales back in the ocean. Except, in this metaphor, the whale was already in the ocean minding its own business, and then two dumb kindergartners put it in a plastic baggie and then moved it miles away from its home. It was supposed to be a happy moment seeing Harry get rehabilitated into moth society. But what actually happened was
a lot darker.
We gathered around the teacher, she opened the jar, but Harry didn't fly out, so then she had to shake Harry out of the jar. We've already established that Harry isn't that smart. Eventually, he finally understood that he was free. The whole sky was waiting above him. He flew upward, wings fluttering, ready to reclaim his moth life. Well, turns out there's a good reason giant moths only come out at night. And that's mostly because of camouflage and the fact that their predators are asleep. Harry had neither of those advantages at our playground in the middle of the day. Not 10 seconds had gone by when a bird from a nearby tree swooped down and grabbed Harry in its beak. Harry was a free moth for a good 10 seconds before his painful, inevitable death. Immediately, the entire kindergarten class began screaming. My sister ran after the bird, demanding that he released Harry. Unfortunately, birds don't listen to those sorts of demands. Am I right, Jaden?
Ari, sit. Ari, roll over. Ari, stay. No. Speak.
So then the teacher had to give us the talk about how nature is a lot scarier than it is in the movies. Basically, the circle of life involves a lot of death. But on the bright side, we totally made that bird's day. He was just sitting in a tree, probably wishing Arizona had more worms, and then boom, free meal. I wonder what I'm going to eat. Whack. For all we know, that could have been the bird's first time eating a moth. I'm sure that bird told all of his bird friends and they totally didn't believe him. Dude, I just caught a moth. Like one of the big ones, yeah. I know they're nocturnal, but it was just flying around in the middle of the day. No, I'm telling the truth. Dude, there were like 30 children who all saw me. Ask any one of them and they'll tell you I caught that moth. I don't remember what happened for the rest of the day during school, but I'm pretty sure we didn't get much done. When we got home, me and my sister tearfully told my mom about how Harry had met his doom. My mom said that she was trying not to cry, but I think she was lying. I don't think she was as emotionally attached to Harry as we were. Harry was only a part of our lives for a couple of hours, but years have passed and me and my sister still talk about Harry. Just randomly in conversation, one of us will ask, hey, do you remember Harry?
Yeah.
And now a random moth that died 15 years ago will be remembered forever in our hearts. If only Harry was alive to see what he would have become. I want to share with you some pictures I've saved in Harry's scrapbook. Here are Harry's baby pictures. Here's Harry's first apartment. And here's the last thing Harry ever saw.
Jeff, you have the board.
I'll take random James trivia for 400, Alex.
This was James's first career choice before his YouTube channel kicked off.
Oh, I know this one. What is a male prostitute?
Okay, that bit's done now. Male prostitute was never a career goal.
Well, I mean, it's not completely off the table. You never know how YouTube will turn out. If you didn't know this Odd Ones Out trivia, I wanted to be a math teacher when I grew up. My dream job was actually a cartoonist. But since me and my parents didn't think I'd be able to make any money drawing pictures, I chose a math teacher as my, I'll settle for this job. I mean, I like math, so I wouldn't have hated being a math teacher. And I'm also probably good at teaching children. I haven't checked, though, but how hard can it be?
Listen, kids, I have 2.7 million subs on YouTube, so if you want a shout-out, you'll have to do the homework.
And I thought that a teaching job would give me enough free time to doodle cartoons, so being a math teacher would have been perfect. But oh boy, that did not turn out how I expected. If for some reason my channel died and I stopped making YouTube videos, I would probably go back to school and finish my math education major. And then I'd be teaching a class and then one of my students would find out that I used to do YouTube and then they'd say, "Mr. James, are you the odd ones out?"
The odd ones out? I haven't heard that name in years.
You shouldn't smoke in front of children, Mr. James. I just want to point this out. In my peeing video, I drew my first grade teacher like this. And in my Harry the Moth video, I drew my kindergarten teacher like this. Do you have an explanation on why they're drawn so similar?
Yeah, I was lazy.
Teachers play such an important role for children, and if I'm being honest, I don't think they get paid enough to take their job seriously. A good teacher can make you excited to learn the material and actually teach you, while a bad teacher can not only waste your time and not teach you anything, but also crush your dreams. I took choir in 9th grade. Everyone had to take it, okay? It was a prep school. I'm not weird. And one time while we were singing a song, the teacher said, "Stop. Who's flat?" Then she pointed at a boy and told him, "You, sing." And he sang for a bit. Then she pointed at another boy, "You, sing." Then she went through a couple more, and then she pointed to me and said, "You, sing." And I sung. "Stop! James, during the next song, don't sing." Either she had really good hearing, or I was just that terrible at singing. Now, I really hated choir, so if given the choice to sing or not sing, I would choose not every time. But what if I actually wanted to be a singer, and when I sang just then, I was trying my hardest? That would have been soul-crushing! I would have given up on music right then and there. Thankfully, my art teacher was a lot more laid back. She definitely had favorite students, and I wasn't one of them, but she never told anyone not to draw. One time, I showed my art teacher my newest comic, which at the time was this one. And without telling her that I was the one who made it, I asked, "What do you think of this art style?" And she said, "Oh, I hate it. But it's fine if you like it. In my classroom, we try to go for realism. But people with that art style can still have successful careers."
She said she hated it.
Teachers just need to be more supportive with students and teach them in creative ways. That's why I think so many people hate math. You just haven't had a teacher that made you want to learn.
You'd pay attention and study for the tests if I was your math teacher. Wouldn't you?
Don't get me wrong, teaching isn't an easy job. And even the best teacher can't make everyone in their class excited to learn. I mean, I probably could, but there's definitely a difference between a good and bad teacher. I had this French teacher in 9th grade, and she made me really hate French, and by association, the entire country of France. She spoke English on the first day of class, and then only spoke French for the rest of the year. We were in French 1, by the way. I didn't understand anything that was going on. I would just tune her out. I'd be doodling on a piece of paper, and then people would get out their textbooks and start flipping through it, and then I'd think, "Oh, we're doing this now?" I didn't learn anything in that class. Honestly, I barely know any French. This is all the French words that I know. I can count to 10. Ou, dou, trois, quatre, cinq, six, sept, huit, neuf. Okay, I can only count to 9. And I know that Eiffel Tower is Tour Eiffel, quack is coin, and door is portal. My twin sister, who was in the same class and had the same living conditions as me, turned out a lot different. She learned a lot of French and continued to take classes after 9th grade. So maybe this whole knowledge thing has a lot to do with the student and not the teacher. Nah, it's the teacher's fault. Did anyone else, when you were little, think that your teacher lived at the school? Because I remember one time my kindergarten teacher came to school in her pajamas and told us that she lived at the school. And that made perfect sense. Yeah, this is your home. This is the only place they ever see you. Therefore, you live here.
Man, I wish I could work in my pajamas.
When I went to community college, I had a math teacher who was this old grandpa, and on the first day, he told us that he never missed a class in 20 years. But then, the very next day, he didn't show up. Now, in college, teachers not showing up to class is pretty normal. Or at least it was in the colleges I went to. It happened more times than it did in high school, that's for sure. That's something to look forward to, seniors. Every time it does happen, there's always that one kid who will say, "You know, there's a rule that if the teacher doesn't show up within the first 15 minutes of class, then you can leave." I don't know if that rule is true, but I'm not going to look it up. Because I like that rule, and I want it to be true. And I don't even go to college anymore, so why does it matter? So teachers not showing up, that's not too abnormal, but since this old guy told us he never missed a day of class in 20 years, we thought he died. But nope, he just missed a day. He showed up the third day. I don't know what his excuse was, because after I saw him, I thought, "Oh good, he's alive." And then I stopped paying attention, because community college sucks. I'd say that my favorite teacher would be my 11th grade AP US History teacher. I liked him because it was obvious that he liked the material, and he would teach us in a way that was fun and interesting. He was also a more laid-back and generally a funny person. He's the teacher that I want to be. He gave me a compliment once that has always stuck with me. He was telling the class about the AP test, which is the super important open-ended essay test that we took at the end of the year, and if we did well on it, the grade would count for college credit. So like a week before the test, our teacher was preparing us, and he said,
Guys, don't try and be funny on the AP test. The graders don't have a sense of humor. Except James. James can be funny on the test. Aw, that compliment made me so happy and confident. I don't know how serious my teacher was when he said that, and he probably doesn't even remember saying it, but I really appreciated it. I ended up getting a 3 on the test, which is only partial credit in select colleges, so maybe I'm not funny. That was 11th grade. In 12th, I took all AP classes, but I didn't take any of the AP tests. I was too apathetic. But I turned out fine. Actually, no. My favorite teacher is my 9th grade English teacher, who emailed me and said he watches my videos. Hi, Mr. Batman. Sorry I plagiarized the Berlin Wall essay. I really wanted to talk about my 9th grade poetry teacher. Yes, I took choir, French, and poetry all in 9th grade. It was a preparatory school. That teacher was definitely something, but this video is getting too long, so I'll have to make a part 2.
Yeah, I'm 25. That's a quarter of a century. And I've been doing YouTube full-time for a nickel of a century. My life's practically over. I'm at a point now where when people recognize me, they'll say, OMG, James, I've been watching you since the 8th grade. And I'll be like, OMG, your beard is bigger than mine. So I've been thinking, you know those going through puberty videos your 8th grade science teacher shows you for some reason? The ones that are like, hey boys, I'm the puberty platypus, and I'm here to tell you that your body is going through some wonderful changes. You're gonna start growing hair in weird places, and smelling bad, but that's just the wonders of life. And then for the girl one, it's like, oh, ladies, you're gonna want to sit down for this one. Well, I think they need to make a puberty part 2 video that they show to high school seniors and prepare them better for the quote-unquote adult life they're about to face. Schools just give you a piece of paper and a funny hat and send you off into the world expecting you to figure out your intricate and complicated life through what? Trial and error? I want the puberty part 2 video that I'm planning on making to start like this. The puberty platypus will come back on screen and will be like, well, kids, you did it. See? Puberty wasn't so bad. For some of you. Unfortunately, dear children, this is only the beginning. And then he'll start talking about all the fun things you can expect in the following years. Like, instead of growing hair in new places, for some of you, your hair is going to start thinning and falling out. And if you're a guy worried about hair loss, then I've got good news. This video is sponsored by Bald People. They're paying me money to tell you to just shave it all. Shave it. Looking good, Rush! You're also going to be perpetually tired. And before you start thinking, I'm not going to be tired, I'm going to get 8 hours of sleep every night. First of all, no you're not. And second of all, that's not going to help. You will still be tired, and there's no escape. Why do you think adults say, ha ha ha, don't talk to me till I've had my coffee? It's because every adult, from the moment they wake up, is dead tired. And we need stimulants just to function. You're also going to start getting excited about things you used to think were stupid, like furniture shopping. Sometimes you'll go on Zillow and look at the most expensive houses and think, oh, that's a nice kitchen backsplash, and then wonder where your youth went. Another thing, 90% of the mail you get is worthless, but the other 10% of mail is very, very important. Like, if you ignore it, your water, power, and Wi-Fi get shut off. Important. Or you'll get mail that's like, hey, you owe the government some money, and we know how much money you owe us, but we're not going to tell you, stupid. So you either have to figure that out yourself, or pay another person some money so they can tell you how much money you owe the government. Hey there. I don't want you to be scared of growing up. There's still plenty of pros that come with being older. And also, you can't escape it. You'll get to be independent and make your own decisions. Did your parents never let you get a tattoo? Well, now you can. But I'm going to put it somewhere that I can easily cover it up when I visit them for Christmas. That way it's not weird if I exclusively wear turtlenecks around them. I just like them. Another pro, you won't complain about the food you have at home because you'll only ever buy the food you like and can afford. You're independent now. You can eat cake for breakfast. However, if you do that, your stomach will hurt and you won't be able to move for 8 hours. Okay, at first you'll be able to get by with bagel bites for dinner. That's a standard college-grade meal. But after a couple of years of that abuse, your body will go, yo, do you think you could throw down some, I don't know, fruit every once in a while? Yeah, we gotta make, like, new cells for your developing brain, and we've been making them solely out of bagel bites. It is genuinely upsetting that I have to figure out what I have to eat 3 times a day There are some days where I'm hungry, but I'm not craving anything, and I know I have to eat, but I'm looking through my fridge, and I end up eating string cheese and grapes for lunch. On a bagel. I wish I could just unhinge my jaw and eat a month's worth of food like a snake. Do snakes only eat once a month? I don't know, I hate snakes. 50% of my driving destinations is to the grocery store, and the other 50% is drive-thrus. It's all food-based. Oh, actually, sometimes I do have to go to the gas station. Wait, that's just food for my car. I've been trying to eat out less, so I bought boxed frozen orange chicken instead of going to Panda Express. But then I realized, I'm still eating out, I'm just heating up the orange chicken in my own microwave. Some of you might like cooking. I don't. Whenever I cook a meal, I purposely cook way more food than I need so I can get two meals out of only cooking one. I would rather eat progressively staler pasta all week than have to cook every day. But even if you like cooking, I know one aspect of it you don't like, cleaning up the mess afterwards. Why do you think the rule, I cooked it, you clean it, exists? And now that you're an adult, you're about to learn, it never stops. Get used to doing the dishes and laundry because as long as you eat and sweat, those are two chores you do until the grave. Laundry is such a prevalent chore that I guarantee someone watching this video needs to put the wash into the dryer, but instead they're watching YouTube. Well, go on. Leave. I don't know how I'm going to handle folding dishes and cleaning laundry for the rest of my life. I'm only 25 and already burned out from it. Hey, speaking of burnout, I want to talk about something I just learned recently called having a healthy work-life balance. Some of you might have started working from home this last year. Welcome to the club. You now have no reason to go outside. So take it from a guy who's been working from home for 5 years. Go outside anyway. There's definitely benefits to working from home. Like, you get to work in your pajamas and... But it can be tough to work and live under the same roof. And I think a lot of young people have this mindset of being on the grind is a good thing, or at least a normal one. While it is important to work hard to achieve your goals, you need to be aware of burnout. And as a content creator who is his own boss, it's very easy to fall into an unhealthy work ethic. If you think your boss is annoying, try having a boss that lives inside your head and will not shut up about working. It could be Saturday and you're hanging out with your friends and your boss in the back of your head will say, "You could be working." There will always be work that needs to be done, you will always feel anxious about not posting, and since you technically live in the office, you could theoretically work well into the early hours of the morning every night. Or morning, I don't know. I want to talk more about burnout and my YouTube journey and how I'm managing it, but that will be for another time because I've been working on it. I'm definitely getting better, I'm more relaxed on the weekends and going to more social settings, vaccinated of course. It's taken me a while to learn the importance of a healthy work-life balance and that it's okay to work on yourself. I'm not sure if you all related to that last part, maybe give it a couple of years. But anyways, growing up is a part of life, adulthood is something that you all should be looking forward to, you learn and experience so many things, and that's just your early 20s. And before I go, is there anything you want to add, Puberty Platypus? Am I ever going to find something I'm truly passionate about? I drift through every day doing what feels like nothing, seeing all my high school friends getting married and starting families, doing things that they're happy and excited about. It makes me feel even more isolated in my state of confusion and solitude. Who am I? Why don't I know myself anymore? What went wrong? Bagel bite. And publish. A 23-minute long movie review about an 80s puppet movie sure is different than the content I usually post. And even though it was a lot of work, it was fun to try something new, and I think the video turned out pretty good. Am I right, Chamberlain Funko Pop? Mmm. Well, it's a good thing I'll never, ever have to worry about this franchise ever again. Are you sure about that? When I made a review about a cult classic puppet movie that came out 35 years ago, the last thing I was expecting was that said franchise would get a reboot announced 2 weeks after I posted. And every single day since then, people have been tweeting at me saying, "Hey James, did you know Netflix is making a Dark Crystal series?" Yes, I know. Do you know who you're talking to? If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, then I recommend you watch my video, The Movie That Was Too Scary for Baby James. In that video, I reviewed a scary kids movie called The Dark Crystal. The movie was more or less a passion project of Jim Henson, the creator of The Muppets, and so this movie was done entirely with puppets. It came out before I was born, but I still somehow watched it and got scarred for life. In my review, I said some good things about the movie, like I thought it was a very creative and artistic film, but I also said some negative things about it, too. As YouTubers, sometimes we forget that our videos are public and can be viewed by anyone. And when we talk about companies, we can forget that real people are attached to those properties who have poured hundreds of hours into these projects, and there's a chance they'll see our videos. And unbeknownst to me, Lisa Henson, current CEO of the Henson Company, saw my video. And for some reason, I never considered that was ever going to happen. If I had known that Lisa frickin' Henson was gonna watch my video, I probably would have worded a few things differently. I don't think she was too mad at my video, though, because she invited me to tour the Henson office, and I got to see a real-life Skeksis puppet, which resurfaced an unhealthy amount of repressed memories, and I got to meet some of the puppeteers, which was a whole lot of fun. Also, before Age of Resistance was released, I got contacted by Netflix, and they invited me and some other Dark Crystal fans to an early screening of the first two episodes, and I signed a non-disclosure agreement so I couldn't spoil anything. I don't remember when that NDA said I was allowed to talk about it again, but hopefully I'm in the clear. When I was in the early screening, I just remember thinking about how cool that these characters in this world were back on the big screen. Netflix has a pretty big screen. And the puppetry and cinematography have only gotten better. And the fact that 95% of everything was done with practical effects and puppets, it's beautiful! There's not a single human in this series, except in episode 10 when this puppeteer's head can be seen for a couple frames. I just checked and they actually took it out, so I still saw it. So much time and care and hard work was put into this series that there was a documentary made about how hard it was to make this series. If any of you are wondering, no, Reunip does not make an appearance in Age of Resistance, nor is there a naked baby Jen puppet. Also, if you're worried that the show wasn't going to be as dark and scary as the original, don't worry. It's darker and scarier than the original. The Netflix Family Twitter account was nice enough to timestamp every scary part in the series, and as you can see, stuff goes down in episode 10. Surprisingly, though, they didn't blacklist the scene of the Skeksis peeing out of three different pee streams in episode 6 at 28 minutes and 41 seconds. Really makes you think. So, artistically, this series is beautiful, and it needs to do well because it's left open for a season 2, and I want a season 2 to get greenlit. I'm not going to do a plot summary of the whole thing like I did in the first review because I don't want this video to be an hour long, and you should watch it for yourself. I'm not just going to do everything for you, I'm not your mom. But there are some things you should know before you go watching the series. This is kinda spoilery, but I won't spoil that much. So this alien planet is home to these creatures called Gelflings. They can share memories with each other by holding hands, and the girl Gelflings have wings. There's also this other creature called Agura, who's been around since the beginning of the world. She's basically Yoda's sassy grandma. And then out of nowhere, these tree aliens visit. Stay with me here. And they crack this very important crystal, and in doing so, they split into two different creatures. Their goodness becomes this thing called a mystic, who are dumb, and their bad side become these cool bird monsters called Skeksis, and then the Skeksis took over the entire world, so whoops. None of this is explained in the original movie, and it's not explained in the series until episode 7, but I think that the tree alien backstory should have started the series, which is why I just spoiled it for you. The original 90-minute film already had so much lore, and this new Netflix reboot just added even more lore? There's even a character named Lore? How much lore is there? Speaking of names, there are a lot of made-up words in this series, and sometimes those made-up words are hard to remember. Within the first minute of Age of Resistance, the narrator tells us that there are seven clans of Gelflings, but then only names three, because there are only three important ones that we should care about. I don't even know the names of the other four clans, and I'm like a Dark Crystal aficionado. Also, there are like 10 evil bird monsters, all with names like Skekso, Skeksil, Skektek, and Shrek. Granted, most of the time they go by their more common names like Chamberlain or the Emperor, but gosh dang it, I can't even remember some of those names. That's the pussy one, and that's the one that made that weird face in the original movie, and that's the one whose voice does not sound like a Skeksis at all.
Now, What vexes you, child?
Another thing you should know is that I thought this series was pretty slow. Maybe it's because I'm impatient, or I'm used to watching YouTube videos at 2x speeds exclusively, but do you remember in the original movie how there was a scene where the Skeksis ate dinner for 2 whole minutes, and visually it was amazing, but the whole time you're thinking, yeah, I get it. Well, there are a lot of scenes like that in the series. Let's take the beginning of episode 2, for example. It starts with a character we've never seen before waking up and putting on his shoes and making porridge and then spilling the porridge on his shirt and brushing his hair, then roughing it up, then grabbing his cleaning supplies.
And it's just a whole minute of this unnamed character getting ready for his day. It's just so boring. Just cut it, please!
And it wouldn't be that bad if this was the only example, but trust me, there are plenty of examples. I just don't want to spoil any of them for you. Turning a 90-minute movie into a 9-hour TV series, you're going to have some filler or some scenes that don't necessarily drive the plot forward. I get that. Luckily, I found this Chrome plugin that lets you watch Netflix at 2x speed, so
it's all good.
Making this video has got me thinking about prequels and how tricky they are to do right. In the original movie, there are only 2 Gelflings left in the entire world, so a prequel that sets up a world with 7 different Gelfling clans, we as an audience know that something's gonna happen, and it ain't gonna look good for the Gelfling. The series also added this MacGuffin Halo sword-looking thing that was supposed to save the world, but the whole time watching that, I kept thinking, no, that's not how the world is saved. The world's not saved until 1982. Also, there are certain characters that we know can't die because they're in the original movie, but boy does this show make you think some OG characters are gonna die. It almost makes me wish that the writers used the 80s Dark Crystal movie as inspiration and rebooted the series in its own separate universe. Movie reviewers tend to focus a lot on the negatives, and I don't want to come off as a hater because I really did enjoy this series and I want a season 2 to get made, so let's end this video with some of the things I liked about this series. I like that we got to see the Skeksis with more personality because they were always so over-the-top evil. The Hunter Skeksis was just on a whole new level of cool. All the other Skeksis never came across as threatening. Like, look how slow they walk. I could beat them up. But the Hunter Skeksis, oh man, he was awesome. Do you think he'll be my friend? I like that the series didn't tone down the darkness, and if anything, they amplified it, because everyone like me should have a deep-seated fear of puppets. There are some great nods to the original Dark Crystal, like when the Emperor Skeksis says,
I will never be dust!
But we all know that's the very first thing he does in the original movie. Celadon is a piece of garbage and does not deserve a redemption arc. The voice acting is amazing. There are a lot of talented people voicing these characters, like Luke Skywalker. A YouTuber named Barnaby Dixon, who made these very cool mantis finger puppets, got to work on a scene where the puppets put on a mini puppet show. And that was everything I liked about Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. So, in conclusion, if you have 9 hours of free time, download the Video Speed Controller plugin, set that bad boy to 2, and save yourself 4.5 hours. But do watch Age of Resistance. Also, executives, if you still need someone to play Rayunip...
Hello. Hey.
Guys, I have a brilliant idea. What if we do the In My Feelings Challenge? What do you think?
What's the In My Feelings Challenge?
It was that dance people did outside of their moving cars in 2018.
That's stupid.
I know! It's weird to me that YouTube Rewind 2018 came out over 5 years ago, which makes it old enough to be something to reminisce about. There's a fresh generation of iPad kids who don't get to experience the yearly tradition of coming together as a community and watching the newest YouTube Rewind, and absolutely hating it. In case you all forgot, the website YouTube.com used to make these celebratory videos showcasing all the important events and memes that had happened throughout the year. And all these YouTubers would get together and do a silly little dance, and everyone had a grand old time. And since these videos were produced by the very platform you're currently watching this on, Rewinds would always receive a lot of attention. Now, according to my memory, YouTube Rewinds were pretty well received. At first.
But you see, as time went on, the general public and the YouTubers involved started to grow weary. People were throwing around words like cringe and this isn't what YouTube represents and that's that. And it all accumulated to YouTube's magnum opus, YouTube Rewind 2018. Everyone controls Rewind. Hashtag YouTube Rewind. Which is a video that was so universally hated that it holds the world record for most disliked video ever. A record it will now hold perpetually because of the whole dislike thing. The audience wasn't happy, the YouTubers involved weren't happy, until finally YouTube snapped and was like, alright, fine, if no one wants it, we'll stop doing it. We were just doing this as a favor anyways. And so YouTube discontinued the Rewind project indefinitely, with 2018 being the last time we ever got a Rewind.
What about me, James?
How dare you even consider yourself worthy of being called a Rewind 2019? A top 10 video? Really? At least 2011 had Rebecca Black hosting. Leave 2019 before I tell you the top 10 ways on how I'm gonna hurt you! So getting back to the actual last YouTube Rewind, you know, the one with the most dislikes in the whole world, if we skip to 3 minutes and 2 seconds into that video, we see...
Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge!
Oh, geez. That's me. I know I'm a little late to the party, but since we've all had enough time to grow and reflect as people, I would like to finally share some of my thoughts and experiences working on YouTube Rewind 2018. The first thing I want to talk about is how none of the YouTubers involved got any type of monetary compensation. At least none of the ones I talked to did. This was a big issue that a lot of other YouTubers had in their expose videos, but I personally was not bothered by it. Was I getting paid in exposure? Yes. In fact, I actually lost money doing this because I had to get my friend Rush to animate some of the scenes, so I, you know, paid him for his work. But what I'm trying to tell you is that as much as I'm about to complain about YouTube Rewind, don't feel any sort of empathy for me, okay? I did this to myself. I think the best piece of advice I could give you is that if YouTube ever reaches out to you and is like, hey, do you want to be a part of Rewind? You should say, let me read the script first. But I didn't know that in 2018. And I also didn't know that in 2017. If you look at YouTube Rewind 2017 and watch all the way to the end, keep going. Right there. Right there in the credits is me and Jaden doing a floss in space. It was a lot cooler back then. They also wanted all the animators to animate our characters in the middle of a jello fight, and I think they wanted to put our cartoon characters over footage of real-life YouTubers in the middle of a jello fight, but they gave us no direction, and I don't think they ever filmed a scene where they were like, okay, real-life YouTubers, remember to leave that spot empty because that's where the animated guy's gonna go, because you know they gotta plan that kind of stuff out ahead of time, right? So instead, they just threw our unusable animated jello fight with no background at the very end as this extremely out-of-place post-credits scene. So 2017 was pretty uneventful for me. Like, yeah, I was in YouTube Rewind, but, you know, I was in the credits. Who's going to stick around and watch the credits, you know? But 2018 was going to be my year. Rewind wanted me back, and this time they were giving me a speaking role. Holy sh! My line was going to be, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. And then the YouTuber Swoozy, who would be in his real-life human form, would say, right? And then we'd fist bump Who Framed Roger Rabbit style. So do you remember that trend in 2018 where people were doing that dance outside of their moving car? Well, apparently, that was called the In My Feelings challenge. Back in 2018, I didn't even know it was called that. I thought it was called... stupid. Now, if you've at all watched YouTube Rewind 2018, Everyone Controls Rewind, hashtag YouTube Rewind, you might be wondering why after I specifically suggest we do the In My Feelings challenge, that not a single YouTuber or talk show host can be seen dancing outside of a moving vehicle. That's because YouTube didn't want to promote unsafe behavior, so they didn't want to show anyone dancing outside of a car. So... they weren't really doing the challenge then, were they? YouTube, if you don't want to promote unsafe behavior, don't promote the In My F***ing Feelings Challenge. Kids are still going to look up the In My Feelings Challenge and then watch multiple videos of people dancing outside of cars on YouTube.
We don't want to promote unsafe behavior.
It's on your platform, dog. You know, looking back, that should have been my first red flag, but I was still optimistic. I was so excited to be a part of this huge project, and I knew there were going to be a bunch of YouTubers involved, but I was going to be one of the few animated ones. I was going to stand out. I was going to be the odd one out. Knowing how Rewind handled animation in 2017, when they asked me to be a part of 2018, I told them, hey, love the line, but I think it would be a good idea if we met in person, you know, and that way you can show me everything you're planning, and I can ask you all the right questions. And they agreed and invited me to visit the set the day they were filming Swoozie's line. So I was there, physically behind the camera, when Swoozie said, right? And then fist bumped nothing. I got to experience what it was like to be on a real film set with actors and directors and costumes and catering and makeup, and it was a lot, honestly, for just one line. And maybe it was because they had booked Swoozie for a full hour, but they had this beautiful man say, right? And then fist bump nothing no less than 50 times. It's one line, guys. I think we got it. And then after, like, take 87, my stomach sank when the director said, okay, Swoozie, how about you try saying, guys, let's do the In My Feelings Challenge. Wait a minute. That's my line. Are we changing it? Which line am I animating now? Do you want me to do both, just like how you got Swoozie to do both? And what, oh, you'll pick your favorites? I asked the director right there which line was I animating, and he said he was going to let me know. And then we went outside and filmed Swoozie dance in front of a brick wall, and which parts of him dancing was I going to animate my guy next to? He said he was going to let me know that too. So I took all the information I learned that day and referred it back to the other animators. What they wanted were two shots. They wanted 5 seconds of our characters dancing, and they wanted another shot of all of us sitting around a campfire singing horribly. After doing some quick math, I realized that if all 7 of us animators did a 5-second dance, that would be 35 seconds of cartoons dancing, which for a YouTube Rewind would be a lot of screen time. I had a sinking feeling that they weren't going to be using our full 5-second clips. And they didn't even let me know. Now, for my life-changing speaking role, I had to record my line on my own, which normally wouldn't be a problem. But in late 2018, I had just moved to California, and I didn't have my own setup set up. And to make the whole situation worse, I was only given 1 week to finish my animation and record my line. So, you know, the clock was ticking. Now, I think the second best piece of advice I could give you is that if you're ever in need of a quick jerry-rigged sound booth, go into your closet and hide under a comforter. In fact,
hello, real-life human James here, coming to you on a Blue Yeti inside of a bathroom. The acoustics in here are terrible. Could you imagine voicing a cartoon character in this? Guys, let's do the In My Feelings Challenge. See, it doesn't work. Now.
All right, and now we're here inside of our makeshift sound booth, and you can hopefully hear the quality change right away, you know, like, guys, let's do the In My Feelings Challenge. See, you know, we don't need expensive sound booths to have a good time. But back in 2018, I wanted the most important line in my career to be recorded in a professional sound booth. Luckily, I was in luck. You see, California is one of the few places home to something called a YouTube space. A YouTube space advertises itself as a place to aid content creators, providing them with facilities to create content for their YouTube channels. And to access said facilities, you needed at least 10,000 subscribers. A little weird they put a number on it, but I get it. I had just moved to California. I knew I was going to be hitting this place up all the time. When I first went to the YouTube space, I didn't call ahead or set up an appointment or anything because there wasn't an option to do so on the website. But I figured they would have to help me out, right? The line I needed to record was for a YouTube Rewind. And you're a YouTube space! Like, Susan personally asked me to be here, you know? So I drove an hour to the space, I went inside, showed them my sub count, and they said that in order to use the facilities, I had to fill out all these forms on my computer back home. But it's for a YouTube Rewind. Then I drove another hour back home and started filling out the forms, but by the time I got to the quizzes, I realized, I think this wild goose chase is probably going to take longer than a week to resolve. With time running out, I gingerly asked my new friend Aaron if I could use his setup, and he said yes, and I didn't even have to show him my sub count. I mean, I showed him anyway, though. So the line you hear me say in the 2018 Rewind was recorded in the Game Grumps office, which I think means, at the very least, Game Grumps deserves to be credited in the description of Rewind. Come on, YouTube! They were the only ones who took me in when your own company turned me away! The deadline was fast approaching. I mean, it was fast approaching as soon as I got it, but I've been in crunch mode before, and I'm sure the nameless video editors were just trying to hit their impossibly tight deadlines too. I reminded myself what I was making all of these sacrifices for. Everyone was going to unanimously love this video and what it represents and look up my channel afterwards and subscribe. December 6th, 2018. A day that changed history. It was raining that day. And the world was exposed to what YouTube had been cooking up. And they all collectively hated it. Like, a lot. Like, to the point where I would be lucky if I didn't lose subscribers. I think the audience knew that none of the YouTubers involved had any say in the creative process. We were just reading our lines from YouTube script, you know? So at least I get to say I'm in the most disliked video in history, and no one's too mad at me. Right? So, was all of this stress worth it? Now, I got paid in exposure, and the exposure was overwhelmingly negative. In fact, I think Rewind was only positive for one other YouTuber. Do you have any guesses? Jaden motherfucking Animations pulled off the biggest prank of 2018. One of the reasons people disliked 2018's Rewind was because PewDiePie, the number one YouTuber at the time, wasn't included. But Jaden, being the genius that she is, knew he wasn't going to be included again, so she snuck in a PewDiePie reference into her 5-second dance, and no one caught it, and it made the final cut. Jaden was crowned the least cringy part of Rewind, and everyone loved her, and she got a big boost in subscribers, and all I gotta say to that is... good job, Jaden. How are you enjoying that cake and eating it, too? Now, there were a lot of valid reasons why people disliked 2018's Rewind. One of them being that the video starts out with Will Smith? He's not a YouTuber. But they didn't seem to mind when 2016 started out with The Rock and 2017 started with The Colbert Show, but whatever. And I don't know if you remember what YouTube was like in 2018, but it was in the news a couple of times, you know, over a few small things. However, with all of that being said, I do genuinely miss YouTube Rewinds. Getting to wake up and go, wow, it's December and a new YouTube Rewind just dropped. I'm going to watch it. And then I get to see a handful of YouTubers I recognize do a dance and not recognize any of the other YouTubers. And then I get to see the rest of the internet's reaction to it. It's better than Christmas for me. Even if it's the cringiest video ever, we still all watched it together as a community. And I think that's what I miss the most. When YouTube felt more like a community. As long as it's not a top 10 video, I welcome back YouTube Rewinds with open arms. And if they do make a comeback, I don't think I'd want to be a part of them. Not because I got burned in 2018, but because I wouldn't want to rob another ignorant YouTuber of the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be taken advantage of and work for free and be a part of history. For now, we just have to live with the 9 Rewinds we do have. But if you're like me and are just dying to see more YouTube Rewind content, and I know you are because you're still here, I've discovered a pretty massive Easter egg. In the description of Rewind 2018 is a link to See All the Easter Eggs. And for your viewing pleasure are 13 brand new shorts that I can only describe as skits that were edited together with existing Rewind footage. I don't think that's what an Easter egg is. They're not that funny and are pretty hard to watch, but isn't that what Rewind's all about? Have a good night.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Don't you ever say, cause I want you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
Don't you ever, hey.
Oh, that's that.
I don't know the rest of the words.
Oh, that's that.
All right, I think we got it.
So I feel a bit obligated to talk about France. It was really fun, really. Okay, one thing though. Every meal is like super important in France. Except for breakfast for some reason. For lunch and dinner, everyone sat down together as a family and talked. But for breakfast, they were just like, here's a croissant. Okay, let's go. I mean, breakfast is only the most important meal of their day. And I was going to make a joke about how they have an entire aisle of cheese in the grocery store, but I realized back home we have an entire aisle for candy and ice cream. So whatever. We went to the Louvre, which was like so amazing. They had really cool art by famous people. They had the famous statue with no arms. They had these really fancy rooms because apparently people used to live here. And probably the most famous painting in the world, the Mona Lisa. That room was super crowded. And right behind the Mona Lisa, there was a super tall painting that probably took 20 years to make. The picture frame was as wide as my body. But were people crowded around this one taking pictures? No. I don't even know what this one's called. The American school system has failed me yet again. And as someone who likes to draw, I thought it was really cool to look at the amazing color and details. Also, I took a bunch of pictures of butts. Look, this is the really famous no arm one. Look at her butt. So I had a good time, but afterwards we went to the Picasso Museum, Modern Art Museum, and this other one. I forgot its name. It was French. And it's kinda weird going into these places as someone who likes to draw cartoons. Oh, I like the colors, they're pretty neat, and oh, putting the face on the side of the head, that's an interesting design. But I kinda have to draw the line somewhere, Picasso. I mean, just look at this! Why is it framed? Someone framed this. And Picasso was a good artist. Shoot, he's better than me. So why did they go with this stuff to hang up? Would you call this his best work? It's not just Picasso. Look at the modern art museums. My favorite piece was the painting of a black ring. In fact, I loved it so much that I drew over it in my phone and probably spent more time in thought than the actual artist. I'm not saying the more real a painting looks, the more artsy it is. Wait, yes I am. I mean, look at my drawings. No, seriously, look at them. Their heads are super round and they're so white they can't dance. If I entered an art contest against Leonardo da Vinci, he would win! Because his stuff took talent. It's not easy to draw something that looks exactly like it does in real life. But cartoons? They're easy. They're so easy. And I know I'm leaving out paintings with color schemes and forms. Now after seeing this, I've come up with something called the Keith Haring Principle to help people like me better understand modern art. In the late 70s, a man named Keith Haring drew graffiti in subway stations and had sort of a unique design. Whenever he started to draw graffiti, he never thought about what the finished product was going to be. He just drew whatever he felt like. He ended up making thousands of them, and people started to notice his unique characters. Soon he got more and more famous and popular. Now he's at the point where you can buy t-shirts and mugs of his drawings, and I think that's really cool. They're interesting designs, and I would wear them. Do they belong in a museum? No. Keith made thousands of these small, simple drawings. They're still art, but not art people should pay to see. They should pay to wear and drink out of it. And by the way, this stuff is in no way research, so I'm talking completely out of my butt right now. But I think Picasso and the circle painting should be on t-shirts, or kids' books, or even webcomics. So people would say, hey, I like your shirt. Thanks, I like the design, and would never frame it and hang it up on my wall.
So like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do.
So immediately after posting the Garfield video, which, if for whatever reason you haven't seen, you should go watch it, I had a bunch of people try and figure out what the second Garfield comic was. And you guys got it almost immediately, like within minutes. I saw a bunch of other comments out there that had the right explanation, but it was the user Solo McCraft's comment that I saw first, and it was the most upvoted. Some people probably spent a good 10 minutes typing out all these explanations. I'm sorry, but this guy was first. So after trying to figure out how to message him on YouTube, I asked if he had a Twitter. He said he did, and we talked there.
You got a PayPal? No, I'm only 15. Crap.
So we decided that I would pay him via a Steam gift card. I just wanted to mention that and say that I was true to my promise of $23. Except Steam only has $20 gift cards, so I guess $3 is still on the table. So now, what you've all been waiting for, let me explain what this comic was trying to do. So that is a teeth brush, and that is teeth paste, and that is John walking up to it, and okay, you know how adults and dentists tell kids that the amount of toothpaste you should put on a toothbrush should be the size of a pea? Well, that's what John was trying to say. They say you should use the amount of toothpaste that is similar to the size of a pea. See, this word pea is supposed to be the pea as in the vegetable pea. I think that's what threw me off the most, is because I kept thinking that this was a potty joke. Then John is going to brush his teeth, and he says, "Garfield, that's not pea-sized." And he says this because Garfield is holding a teeth brush with a mountain of teeth paste. I thought this was like a spray or something. And then Garfield says, "Yes, it is, because the teeth paste is pea-sized because he has a massive pea. That's why it's green. This is a pea as in the vegetable." I don't know why it's not round, though. But I get the comic now! That was stupid. I just want to talk about this comment on the video I saw. "That's not Garfield. That's your own original character. Garfield!" And I really like that. And he's drawn like this. Ah, I love it. See, that's Garfield, and this is Garfield. And okay, there were a couple of people who redrew the comic and sent it to me. And it's funny because some of them, I don't think they knew what was happening either. So I'm just going to read some of the comics that people sent to me. So these three comics right here, they were actually correct. They got it right. I like how this one says, "Not as excited." There's a toothbrush, and then John's walking up to the toothbrush. And they basically all say the same thing. They say you should use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste. And then he's going to go brush his teeth. And I like how this one has a massive toothbrush. And then they all go, "Garfield, that's not pea-sized." And then you see Garfield with the mountain of toothpaste. And he's like, "Yes, it is," because he has another pea. I like this one because it's like actually round. And all the rest didn't get it right. And this one, I really like the facial expressions. There's like, he's walking up and he says, "They say you should use the really big toothpaste." And he's about to go and says, "Garfield, that's not paste." And then he's, "Yes, it is." Oh, I love it. This one, it feels like a computer should be reading this one.
"Here is the bathroom, where the comic will take place. John walks in looking awake as ever. They said to always brush your teeth with toothpaste. He talks about what his dentist said. He gets his IDK. Garfield, that's not a piece." Garfield interrupts him by doing this. He basically pulls up the water pipe and water goes everywhere. John is upset. Then Garfield pulls up the sewage drain as well, so there is gross liquid everywhere. John is scared now. Garfield explains it all in one sentence. "Yes, it is."
Good job, man. This one, I love the creative take on it. First, it's called garnish, and then John comes in. "They say you should use the big toothbrush to remove all your last night mistakes." And then he has another giant toothbrush. "Garfunkel, that's not a toothbrush." "I know, John, it's a crack pipe." "Well, life has no real meaning anyway." Ah, that was great. I like how he took what this was supposed to be a toothbrush and made it look like a crack pipe. And to be honest, it looks more like a crack pipe than a toothbrush. So good job. And this one was made like 20 minutes after I posted the video. It was drawn super fast. And I like how they drew Garfield. How I drew Garfield. So he goes, "Garfield, that's not pieces." Translation, "That's not your toothbrush." He takes it. And then translation, "To fight John for toothbrush ownership, Garfield unleashes his secret power." "Yes, it is." His secret power is being able to control a green slime. So this next one was drawn by a comic friend of mine. He makes a comic called Doggy Bag. He's on Tumblr and iFunny. I actually collabed and made a comic with him before. So this one is actually a remake of the Fire comic. And I just love all the attention to detail in this one. It starts by saying, "By James R., age 6, illustrated by Doggy Bag," and has our Twitter, and he calls it Garfield. And so we see John saying, "Happy birthday," and then, "Wah," and then firefighters go, "Where's the fire?" And then John goes, "My cat just having a B-day." I like how the cake is falling apart. The beep, beep, and the first beep looks funny, like how it was in the first one. And John goes, "Oh no. For some reason, I just love how lifeless Garfield looks in this comic. So anyway, those were all the comics. Sorry if I missed any. Thanks for watching. We're not going to do an end card, and I'll see you next time. Mwah. No, I'm not going to do the mwah this time. Hey man, have you ever noticed that we wear the exact same clothes every day? We don't wear any clothes. What if we're both just a cartoon character, and that's why our clothing's the same?
That's impossible. Cartoon characters' mouths move. We just open our mouths and words start coming out.
Hey, guys. Did you see my brand new Rolex? Are you jealous?
Doesn't your phone tell the time? Maybe he never noticed that his phone has a clock in it.
No one buys a Rolex to tell the time. I can't even read this. People buy Rolexes to indirectly tell everyone how much money we can throw away on useless objects.
Hey, look what my watch can do. Ring, ring.
Hello?
You'll never believe what Brian just bought. What'd he buy?
A watch.
Really?
What a nerd.
Oh, Brian. I'm the kind of person who doesn't really care about my outward appearance. A lot of times in high school, we talk about having a healthy self-image of ourselves, and teachers would say stuff like, "Don't listen to the people who call you ugly. You're beautiful." And all I could think was, there's people saying I'm ugly? For the most part, I haven't really tried to even learn anything about fashion. Most of the time when I get dressed in the morning, I wear just whatever's the cleanest. Like, I don't even know my pant size because I wear basketball shorts all the time. I think I'm a medium. My parents taught me the value of hard work by making me pay for all my clothes, and I am 100% on board with that parenting technique. I think even the super, super rich parents should still make their kids buy their own clothes. Because if you just buy your child anything they want, then they're going to turn into a-holes who just expect everything without having to work hard. Those are the types of kids who grow up to flex all their money on people and who leave their basketball cards all over the cramped dorm. And also, buying your own clothes makes you think harder about what you're going to spend your precious dollars on. You don't want to waste your money, so you have to pick clothes you really like. Except my mom told me I couldn't buy anything with skulls on them. She said they were too edgy. And you know what? Fair enough, Mom. Looking back, I'm glad I skipped that emo edgy phase. But why didn't you let me express my true self, Mom?
Thank you for not letting me do that.
In the 7th grade, I went through an I need to look cool phase. And one time, I saved up quite a bit of money, so me and my mom went on a shopping spree at Kohl's. Hashtag not sponsored. I was going to impress everyone. I was going to look so cool with my brand new 2 pairs of jeans. I'll get this normal blue pair, and then the exact same pair, just in case I spill ketchup on the first pair. That's another reason why I'm pro have your kids pay for their own clothes. So that way they learn how expensive clothes shopping is. Seriously, 2 pairs of jeans was $70. Do you know how many Pokemon cards I could have bought? Probably enough to make my own pair of PokePants.
And that's when I learned about the magical land of Goodwill.
At Goodwill, you could buy mediocre, questionably stained-looking jeans for a fourth of the price of Kohl's. And since I had to buy all my clothes, and I was unemployed, I was at Goodwill every other Saturday for that half-off deal. You're at Goodwill, and everything's half-off. That's like a double sale, people. Here's the thing. Typically, clothes stores have a certain style they specialize in. Tilly's, you know you're gonna get that hip LA-style clothes. At Old Navy, you know you're gonna get that white boy Ohio look. And H&M, you know you're gonna get
demonetized.
But when you step inside your local Goodwill, you don't know what you're getting. You get every style of clothing all in one place. I got my favorite t-shirt from Goodwill. I even wore it to this panel at VidCon.
You know, the panel where I didn't even talk into the microphone, so you couldn't hear half the word they said.
Ah, but James, I don't want to wear clothes that have already been worn by other people. They're gross. Cuties and herpes.
Yeah, no, that's true. You don't know who else has worn your clothing. But then again, you could be wearing something that was also worn by the Odd Ones Out. Yeah, that's right. I donate my clothes to Goodwill. Reduce, reuse, recycle, baby. Why would someone make a pair of pants out of Pokemon cards and give it away? I'm not saying don't buy expensive clothing. Buy whatever you want to buy and can't afford. If there's 2 shirts, one is $40 and one is $5, and you really, really like the $40 shirt and hate the $5 one, you should get the $40 shirt because you'll end up wearing it more often, so you get more use out of it. In economics, there's a term used to measure how much happiness a product will give you, and it's called utils. Sometimes buying more expensive things will give you more utils of happiness, so it's worth it to buy expensive clothing. But for me, I get way more utils buying a shirt for $5. You cannot put a price on all the oodles and oodles of utils I get for wearing a shirt I like for $5. You can wear your Supremes and your Abercrombos or whatever all you want. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense spending that much money on a white t-shirt with an ironed-on logo. There's no material in that shirt that makes it as expensive as it is. Oh, never mind. What you're really doing is paying for the name brand. So you might as well staple 2 $20 bills to your shirt and write in Sharpie, "Look, everyone, I got $40. But again,
If you like the design of a white shirt and a red rectangle, then you be happy wearing it. I'm not telling you what to wear, but I will tell you this. Don't judge someone based on their clothing. That's like the most shallow thing a person can do. Even if someone is wearing old hand-me-downs or a really expensive name-brand t-shirt, don't treat people differently because of their clothing. There's a certain YouTuber going around, I'm not going to say any names, but I will draw pictures, who's teaching kids that their value as a person is correlated to the amount of money they spend on clothing. Don't do that. Okay, real talk over now. School uniforms! People who support school uniforms say that uniforms are better because then the students don't have to think about what they're going to wear the next day because everyone has to wear the same outfit. But like, I already don't think about what I'm wearing. That's probably why I'm naked right now. Okay, that's not entirely true. I'm not just going to walk outside wearing a, I don't know, a pink poncho. I have standards. I just buy all the cheap clothing I think looks nice. In high school, I mostly wore solid color V-neck t-shirts, and one time a kid on the very last day of school told me, "James, you always wear solid color V-neck t-shirts. You're like a cartoon character." That's what I'm going for. I've always wanted to be a cartoon. I don't think you realize how much I love cartoons. One time I bought those shoes with the really fat tongues. I thought they looked cool, but they certainly didn't feel cool. They didn't have any support for my sole. I couldn't go running in them, so what was even the point? And apparently you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes. I'm not sure. Someone just told me, "Hey man, you know you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes, right?" So I had to bury the laces inside my shoe, and I was constantly stepping on the sharp aglets. And all the cool kids saw my shoes and said, "Hey James, those are some pretty fat tongues you got there. You want to come sit at our lunch table?" And I said, "No, being cool sucks!" So now I wear tennis shoes everywhere. Some of you watching are in 7th or 8th grade right now, and you might be going through your own I need to look cool phase. And I just want to say to you little youngins, you don't need to impress or prove yourself to anyone. Wear whatever makes you happy, and that you can afford. And you still have to follow the school's dress code, which is the whole other can of worms. I'm not encouraging anyone to break the rules, okay? All I'm saying is, at the end of the day, what really matters is that you're in 7th grade. Nothing you do will make you cool. I'm sorry. Everyone regrets 7th grade, okay? Just start putting on deodorant, do the homework, you'll get through this.
You know, I never really understood trigger words until I got roommates. I hated my roommates. Except for you, Isaac. He watches my videos. Oh, James, you didn't hate your roommates. You just mildly disliked them. Yes, I did. When I first moved out of my house and went to college, the day I moved into my apartment and I opened the front door, this is what I saw. Keep in mind all the buildup that has gone into this moment. First, I had to get accepted into the school, then pick my major and classes. Then I had to find an apartment close to the school and get everything set up there. Then I had to pack everything up into a suitcase, kiss my dogs goodbye, and then be all on my own for the very first time. I opened the door to where I'd be living for the next 8 months, and this is what I see. Someone sleeping on a couch, he was wearing some bright fast food employee uniform, the TV is on, there's a Halo 5 poster hanging on the wall, the sink, counter, and table is full of dirty dishes, there's a big industrial-sized trash can that is overflowing, inside the fridge there is an empty box of Dr. Pepper, a bottle of ketchup, and a jumbo Costco-sized pack of hot dogs. Where did all these dishes come from? Fun fact, those hot dogs were still in the fridge when I left. But the worst thing that was there was about a million basketball cards just lying on the floor. I'm not even exaggerating, here's proof. Okay, so I got a single room because I brought all my drawing stuff, and I would feel bad if I shared a room with someone and he had to deal with all my drawing stuff being there, and also I wanted to be alone. Looking back, I'm so glad I got a single room because that room couldn't even fit myself. Literally, I could stand in the middle of the room, hold my hands out, and without moving my feet, I could touch the walls of the room. Maybe I just have long arms, I don't know. I mean, I could settle for a small bedroom. But what made living there so horrible were the roommates. What I didn't realize is that these boys also got private rooms, so that means that they too were socially awkward and kept to themselves. Which you might think is a good thing, but you'd be wrong! On the first night of being by myself, I unpack all my drawing stuff and I set it all up, then I turn on the computer and the screen is just black. Nothing was turning on. I tried everything to fix it and it just wasn't turning on. Eventually, I contacted the people who made it, sent it in, and then I got it back working. But during that week while the tablet was being fixed, like, seriously, no joke, that was probably the worst week of my entire life. I'm being serious, making comics and YouTube videos was what kept me sane. And that first night of being on my own and my tablet broke, I cried,
guys. I couldn't even eat food. I was that sad. I hit rock bottom. I remember just watching Captain Sparkles and Game Grumps highlights all day. But then the day I got it back, I was a drawing machine. I posted the comic the very same day. So let's spend the rest of this video talking about these previously mentioned roommates I had. The first person I need to talk about is Isaac. He was the only one that I like, and he's also the only one I told that I made YouTube videos. Now this boy wore Obey hats, he vaped, and he said stuff like, "That's dope." But you wanna know why I liked him the most? Because he did the dishes! Like, me and him did the dishes. It wasn't just him, okay? I'd probably never become friends with him in any other circumstance. Just wanted to say that he was the cool one. I like him. Hi, Isaac. I miss you. I was looking at this post on the internet, and it was where the old memes are today. And for the after picture for the Scumbag Steve meme, it looked exactly like my roommate, who I'll just make up a fake name for, Steve for convenience. I'm pretty sure I was roommates with a meme. Just put a fedora on this meme, and boom, that's my roommate, Steve. And it was a very fitting meme, too. This guy wouldn't do the dishes, he always cooked this ramen thing in the microwave, and would leave this gross juice stuff behind, so then when I would go to use the microwave, it would get my paper plates soggy, so I would have to check every time before I used it to make sure there was no juice stuff behind. And also at night he watched anime. Without headphones? Subbed? Anime has a certain sound to it, I don't know if you knew that. It's like normal Japanese, but really, emphatically. Luckily, it was usually late at night when he started watching, so I would just have to get to sleep before he started and I would be all good. James, why didn't you just ask him to turn it down? I did! One night, I went into his room and I said, "Hey man, can you turn it down?" And you know what? He did turn it down for that night. That night. That one night. The very next night... But you know, he wasn't too bad. He would spend most of his time in his room playing video games, and I would spend most of my time in my room drawing. So except for the microwave juice thing, we didn't get in each other's way too often. Here's actually a funny story. So when I was filming the part in the vegan video when I crumpled up Oreos over Reese's Puffs, Steve walked into the kitchen and he saw me filming this sugary vegan concoction, and I just said to him, "Don't ask." Okay, so here's the roommate that I hated the most. His fake name will be... Hunter. He was the one asleep on the couch when I first walked in, and he was the one who had collected all those billions of basketball cards. Just basketball cards. And he kept them all in the front room. What's the point of having sports cards when you can't even play with them? I mean, I spend money on Magic the Gathering cards, but that's because it's an actual game that you can play with friends. What do you do with sports cards? I mean, I guess you can leave them in the front room of your apartment. Maybe one day your roommate might make a video about it, though. He left his Mountain Dew bottles on the floor, he farted in public, he'd always complain that Steve didn't do the dishes, but he wouldn't do the dishes either. One time I was tired of doing everyone's dirty dishes, so I bought a big stack of paper plates for everyone to use, but Hunter took the paper plates to a party without even asking me, and he didn't even bring them back. But the worst thing this guy did, one day he told me, "My ex-girlfriend doesn't want our dog anymore, so he's coming to live here." What? So this boy wants to bring a dog in an already very small cramped apartment. I couldn't believe this. The dog's name was Snoopy and I loved him. Hunter would put him in his kennel at night, but one night I was like, "Hey Hunter, Snoopy can stay with me if you want." And then boom, from that day forth, I was the one taking care of Snoopy. Snoopy would now sleep in my room, I would be the one who took him out for walks, and I fed him slices of lunch meat. What was great was that when I would go into the kitchen and Hunter would be watching TV, he would call for Snoopy. "Snoopy! Snoops! Snoops!" But he wouldn't come. This dog would follow me everywhere. And then one day Hunter said, "Hey, do you just want to have Snoopy? I was going to get rid of him." And then I said I would take him. And then later that same week, Hunter moved out. He took all the toilet paper too. He basically gave me a dog. And of course I loved that dog. But we lived in such a small space and I was always busy with school and drawing. I knew these weren't the best conditions for a dog to live in. And I'm pretty sure my apartment didn't even allow pets. So I asked people I knew if they wanted Snoopy. And my grandma got one of her friends to take care of him. So I dropped Snoopy off and I've never seen him since. And that's it, the end.
I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school.
Oh man. What is... poetry?
I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask a class, "So, how was everyone's weekend?" Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died!
Haha, yeah, they do that.
But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, "Hey,
Susan, how was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher. Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now, hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they— Oh. Well, now I know where all the budget went. The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school? Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool though. We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today. Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch, so I can just do this during lunch. Look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your 9th grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day. So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place? Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place? IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should. My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it. And surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin. You know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day, he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turned into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word "the," but they did. What did they mean?